delivery or content that would be substantive enough to quiet all the criticism. Or, of course, if we do manage to cross live to the news headlines, they could also be interrupted at any moment to cross live to the Prime Minister's speech, failing which we will return shortly and begin talking, certain that at some point during the introduction to the programme we will be interrupted by the Prime Minister, who will be giving a speech. Is that clear? The Prime Minister is about to give a speech.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer will promise sweeping changes to address the big challenges confronting the UK as he battles to save his job. The Prime Minister is due to make a major speech shortly after dire local election results last week. His former deputy, Angela Rayner, stopped short of calling for him to quit yesterday, but told him to meet the moment. Speaking to LBC earlier, the suspended Labour MP, Col Turner, said it's a real opportunity for the PM to get it back together.
It's going to be an incredibly difficult task for him. If he reads off an autocue today, it's goodnight Vianola, I'm afraid. He's got to be authentic, if authentic is possible. Look, I'm not desperate to see the demise of Keir Starmer, even though I think Keir Starmer, frankly, has treated people like me a bit badly.
22 British passengers are starting 45 days of self-isolation after being evacuated from a cruise ship hit by hantavirus. They arrived at Arrow Park Hospital in Merseyside last night after being flown to the UK from Tenerife. A French passenger on board the cruise has since tested positive for the rare rat-borne virus. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight, who's in Tenerife, has more.
As the planes started making their way around the world, we heard of a French passenger who had fallen ill. This morning, their government says she's tested positive for hantavirus and is now in hospital. While on the flight to America, there's another positive result there, a concerning development that the World Health Organization says it'll be looking at closely.
President Trump has dismissed Iran's response to US proposals to end the war as totally unacceptable. Tehran reportedly wants to separate talks on ending hostilities in the Strait of Hormuz from more complex issues. Independent analysis is predicting that Britain will lose 163,000 jobs as a result of the economic fallout of the conflict. The Item Club says lower income regions such as South Wales and the Humber will be hardest hit this year. It says both areas are dependent on manufacturing and construction industries, which will suffer the most from rising energy prices. And senior doctors in England are being balloted on potential strike action. Both consultants and specialist doctors are in dispute with the government over pay. The results of the ballot will be announced in July. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 30 at 10,263. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain in southern areas, cloudy with sunny spells elsewhere, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
So we need a social media wrap-up for the Work Bake Off. Any takers?
I can design posts on Canva.
I can also design posts on Canva.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, I can design posts with the jam tart theme on Canva.
That's great. I can design posts with the jam tart theme and generate a moving image of a jam roly-poly rolling on Canva.
Well, I can design posts and create a 3D headline that says Bake Your Tarts Out on Canva.
I can design posts and create a 3D headline and turn your face into a Bakewell tart on Canva.
All right, calm down.
With a huge range of easy-to-use design AI tools, anyone can with Canva.
I can slice a video of a croquembouche.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Hello. 3 minutes after 10 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where all eyes are on a screen. Unless you're in the room that's on the screen, in which case all eyes are on a door. Or possibly a podium. So if you are a little bit confused by this moment, if you've just tuned in, the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, is set to give a speech that was not scheduled until those council election and Welsh and Scottish election results came in, and they were, albeit nowhere near as bad as some of the worst predictions, they were by any measure catastrophic. Catastrophic is not, like, unique, one of those words that you cannot have gradations of. I don't know if you're aware of this, because so many people misuse the word, but you cannot have gradations of of unique. Something is either unique or it is not unique. It can't be more unique than something else. Catastrophic, as an adjective, is not like unique. You can have levels of catastrophe. So they were catastrophic results. They could have been more catastrophic, they could have been less catastrophic, but they were nevertheless catastrophic. And that is why the clamour for change is becoming, or has become, unignorable. I will cross live to the room where it happens as soon as Keir Starmer looks as if he's, well, as soon as he appears, frankly, behind the podium and looks set to start speaking. I imagine there'll be an introduction from somebody that journalists then scramble to identify, and then Keir Starmer himself will come to the stage, which puts us in a characteristically tricky position, doesn't it? We all go a little bit Dimbleby at times like this, because my job, basically, is to just not stop talking. That's the only thing they're worried about. They're not even worried about what I might say in these circumstances. They're worried almost exclusively. We're going to cross to the room now. I did warn you. Keir Starmer is still in the front row, though, so mystery person introducing.
I've spent the last few months in Wakefield knocking on more doors than I could possibly count. And like many of you here, I was devastated to see the results come in and watch brilliant, hard-working friends lose their seats. They are honest, decent people, driven by a genuine desire to do right by their neighbours who refuse to give up on their communities. What made it harder was hearing the reasons people in my community were no longer voting Labour. Time and time again, they told me they felt ignored, forgotten, overlooked. They felt that politics no longer works for them and that Britain just isn't fair anymore. It was hard because I am Labour precisely because I believe in a fairer Britain. I'm a working class Northern woman and I know I could not be on this stage were it not for the opportunities fought for and delivered by the Labour Party and the Labour movement. The NHS, minimum wage, workers' rights, a genuine social safety net, equal pay, social housing and sure start centres. In fact, I first got into politics campaigning against the closure of my local sure start centre, having felt the direct impact it was having on the children I worked with. When I started campaigning, it was clear to me then, as it is clear to me now, that the Labour Party is one of the greatest vehicles for changing the lives of working people this country has ever known. But yet, on the doorstep, people no longer believed it. Too many places and communities are feeling left behind. Feeling as if the state cares more about those trying to take from our country than those trying to contribute to it. That it doesn't care about them. We've got to address that. We must deliver for the left behind towns and cities that have seen industry leave and the institutions that formed their identity go with it. We have the opportunity and the ability to draw a line under this story of decline and division and restore hope and prosperity. And this government has already done so much to set this work in motion. But this can only happen with a Labour Party, governing with Labour values. That's why I'm pleased to introduce the man who delivered the first Labour government in a generation and has fought all his life for justice and fairness, the Prime Minister and the leader of our party, Keir Starmer.
Jade Bottrell there, the MP for Ossett and Denbighdale, queuing up the Prime Minister, who is now set to deliver a speech, which I mentioned to you earlier, 7 or 8 times.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And thank you, Jade. They were such powerful words. Thank you for that. introduction. The election results last week were tough. Very tough. We lost some brilliant Labour representatives. That hurts. And it should hurt. I get it. I feel it. And I take responsibility. But it's not just about taking responsibility for the results. It's about taking responsibility to explain how, as a political and electoral force, we will be better and do better in the months and years ahead. Because we are not just facing dangerous times, but dangerous opponents, very dangerous opponents. This hurts not just because Labour has done badly, but because if we don't get this right, our country will go down a very dark path. So just as I take responsibility for the results, I also take responsibility for delivering the change that we promised, for a stronger and fairer Britain that we must build. I take responsibility for navigating us through a world that is more dangerous than at any time in my life. And I take responsibility for not walking away, not plunging our country into chaos as the Tories did time and again. Chaos that did lasting damage to this country. A Labour government would never be forgiven for inflicting that on our country again. I know that people are frustrated by the state of Britain, frustrated by politics, and some people frustrated with me. I know I have my doubters, and I know I need to prove them wrong, and I will. So let me start on a personal note. Like every Prime Minister, I've learned a lot in the first 2 years in the job, in terms of the policy challenges that our country faces. Incremental change won't cut it. On growth, defence, Europe, energy, we need a bigger response than we anticipated in 2024. Because these are not ordinary times. And this is a political challenge just as much as it's a policy challenge. Delivery is, of course, essential, but it's not sufficient on its own to address the frustration that voters feel. We're battling Reform and the Greens, but at a deeper level, we're battling the despair on which they prey, despair that they exploit and amplify. And so analysis matters, but argument matters more. Evidence matters, but so too does emotion. Stories beat spreadsheets. People need hope. So we will face up to the big challenges. And we will make the big arguments, the Labour case, that only Labour values and Labour policies can ensure our country not only weathers these storms, but emerges stronger and fairer. And the Labour case, that neither Nigel Farage nor Zach Polanski offers our country the serious progressive leadership that these times demand. Of course, like every government, we've made mistakes. But we got the big political choices right. I mean, if we'd listened to the advice of other parties, right now we'd be stuck in a standoff with Iran, having been dragged into a war that is not in our interest, and I will never do that. Yeah. We have invested in our public services, in people, in the pride of Britain's communities. Difficult decisions funded that. But now, NHS waiting lists are coming down. Child poverty is coming down. Immigration is coming down. And we are rebuilding from the ground up. They were the right calls. And most of all, we stabilised the economy. The fundamentals are sound. And that matters because it puts us in a much better place to come out of the conflict in Iran stronger and fairer, and for living standards to improve after two decades of stagnation. But that's not enough, clearly. No. For the British people, tired of a status quo that has failed them, change cannot come quickly enough. And truth be told, I'm not sure that they believe that we care. I'm not sure they believe that we see their lives. That's tough to say when you come from a working class background like me. It's hard to hear that, because I do know what it's like to struggle and to strive. But what I take from it is that I've spent too much time talking about what I am doing for working people and not enough time talking about why or who I stand for. Because I can see how hard life has been during these decades of crisis. I can see that very clearly. My late brother Nick spent all his adult life going from one job to the next. The status quo did not work for him. My sister is a carer, working long hours on low pay, year after year after year. She didn't even get sick pay in the pandemic. The status quo did not work for her. For too long, we've ignored people like that. And there are millions of people in that boat. Millions of people who don't get the dignity, the respect, the chance that they deserve to go as far as their talent and effort should take them. Millions of people held back because the status quo in this country does not work for them. I am fighting for them. We are fighting for them. I am their Prime Minister and this is their government. Because I know whose side I'm on. I'm on the side of working people just like my sister. People who work harder and harder, but who worry about the cost of living. They're not asking for the world. They just want to do the best for their kids. They want their town centres, the places they care about, to thrive. Their public services to work. And people in power to see their problems. And right now, they're worried sick. They turn on the TV, they see bombs falling. They go to the petrol station, see prices rising. And they think, how is this happening to us again? They say, how can I be paying the price for a war thousands of miles away that I don't support, that Britain isn't involved in? And it's not a new feeling, is it? For two decades, our country has been buffeted by crisis after crisis. The 2008 financial crash, the Tory austerity that followed it, Brexit, COVID, Ukraine war, on and on it goes. And the response is always the same. A desperate attempt to get back to the status quo, a status quo that failed working people time and again. Our response this time must be different. A complete break. We must make this country stronger. Take control of our economic security, our energy security, our defence security. And we must make this country fairer. Strength through fairness. That is my compass in this world. It is a core Labour argument. And in the coming days, you will see those values writ large in the King's Speech. And you will see hope, urgency, and exactly whose side we're on reflected in everything we say and everything we do. So let me give you three examples today, starting with British Steel. Because what we did in Scunthorpe last year is one of the proudest things we have done in government. That plant was hours away from closure, and that is thousands of jobs gone. An entire region decimated, Britain's security exposed. And so we acted. Parliament was in recess, but it didn't matter. As a united Labour Party, we passed emergency legislation and we took control. And we must bring that same urgency to everything now. Starting, appropriately enough, with Scunthorpe. Because steel is the ultimate sovereign capability. Strong nations in a world like this need to make steel. That's why we're backing steel in Port Talbot and across the UK. But in Scunthorpe, we've been negotiating with the current owner and a commercial sale has not been possible. And now a public interest test could be met. So I can announce that legislation will be brought forward this week to give the government powers, subject to that public interest test, to take full national ownership of British Steel. Public ownership in the public interest. Urgent government on the side of working people. Making Britain stronger with the hope of industrial renewal. That is a Labour choice. Second example. Europe. And I'm sorry, but I need to take a bit of a detour on this. Because I want to remind you what Nigel Farage said about Brexit. He said it would make us richer. Wrong. It made us poorer. He said it would reduce migration. Wrong. Migration went through the roof. He said it would make us more secure. Wrong again. It made us weaker. He took Britain for a ride, and unlike the Tories, actually, who at least had to face up to it, he just fled the scene. And now he'll talk about almost anything other than the consequences of the one policy he actually delivered. Because he's not just a grifter, he is a chancer. Yeah. Yeah. And so at the next EU summit, I will set a new direction for Britain. The last government was defined by breaking our relationship with Europe. This Labour government will be defined by rebuilding our relationship with Europe, by putting Britain at the heart of Europe, so that we are stronger on the economy, stronger on trade, stronger on defence, you name it. Because standing shoulder to shoulder with the countries that most share our interests, our values, and our enemies, that is the right choice for Britain. That is the Labour choice. And for our young people, also something more. Because Brexit snatched away their ability to work, to study, and to live easily in Europe. That's why I'm proud we restored the Erasmus scheme. But I want to go further. I want to make a better offer for our young people. Restore that hope, that freedom, that sense of possibility. And so I want an ambitious youth experience scheme to be at the heart of our new arrangement with the EU, so that our young people can work and study and live in Europe, a symbol of a stronger relationship and a fairer future with our closest allies. That is the Labour choice. And third, the greatest hope. The hope that every parent has of a better future for their children. And I want parents to feel that that is shared by their government. Now, my parent... Don't worry. I'm not going there. But they didn't have a lot of money. And my mum was seriously ill for almost all of her life. But when they were in their later years, reflecting on what gave their life meaning, I could see that, as well as their hope in us, their kids, what comforted them was the idea that they had contributed to a Britain that was getting better for young people, that kids now had a better opportunity than they did. And so I have always been driven by the idea that every child should go as far as their talent or effort takes them. It's a beautiful idea, shared widely across this country. We tell ourselves stories about it, don't we? Stories not unlike mine, about the working class kids who do make it. And I don't blame people for telling those stories. It's important to tell those stories. But it's not everyone, is it? So when I say every child should have the opportunity to go as far as their talent or effort takes them, I mean every child. I mean the kids who are growing up in poverty, the kids who have special educational needs, the kids who can't get a job, and the kids who are ignored, frankly, because society often only puts those who go to university on a pedestal. We don't really see anything else as success. And that is wrong. Deeply wrong. So we will go much further on our investment in apprenticeships, in technical excellence colleges, in special educational needs. We will make sure that every young person struggling to find a job will get a guaranteed offer of a job, training or work placement. And... and we will go much further with our Pride in Place programme. Back the millions of people who give their time and their effort to young people in their community. We will back them, not just with money, but with power. And we will make sure that kids whose talent lies with their hands, kids who go to college, kids ignored by the status quo, because politicians' kids don't go there, they will finally get the respect that they deserve in a stronger, fairer Britain. That is the Labour choice. These are just a few examples, but they show the urgency in hope in our direction. They show the Labour values we will be guided for. And they show, frankly, the lessons that we will learn. Now, other parties will draw different lessons. In fact, they already are. They want more grievance politics, more division, more pointing at Britain's problems, looking not for solutions, but for someone to blame. Now, that's fine if it's me, if it's politicians, that's the job. But increasingly, it's not. It's other people in this country. And I don't think that's British. That is not the decency and respect that we are known for. But it's here. That politics is with us now. And you'll see it again on Saturday at a march designed to confront and intimidate this diverse city and this diverse country. That is why this Labour government will block far-right agitators from travelling to Britain for that event. Because we will not allow people to come to the UK to threaten our community and spread hate on our streets. This is nothing less than a battle for the soul of our nation. And I want to be crystal clear about how we will win it. Because we cannot win as a weaker version of Reform or the Greens. We can only win as a stronger version of Labour, a mainstream party of power, not protest. And I also want to be really clear on this, because I will never stop fighting for the decent, respectful, diverse country that I love. I will never give up on the hope we can unlock in this country, the hope of renters for security in their home, of workers for fairness at work, of public services freed from austerity, the hope of European solidarity, of community pride, of the people who paint over the graffiti that is racist, a country taking control of its future, our spirit unchanged, our resolve unbroken, the hope of a country that can and will become a stronger, fairer Britain. That is the hope I'm fighting for. That is the hope we are fighting for. That is the Labour choice. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Half past ten is the time. Keir Starmer concluding a speech which we will analyse together shortly, but there will follow, I think, about 20 minutes worth of questions from His Majesty's media. That's a figure of speech, by the way. I didn't just invent that His Majesty's media thing. I'm not weird. That's what they used to call it in the olden days. And I am nothing if not a traditionalist. You can book your place now if you want on the switchboard.
Questions from the media, and I'm starting with
His Majesty's media.
Chris.
Thank you. Chris Mason, BBC News. Prime Minister, do you think in your gut what you have said is enough this morning? And what do you say directly to those of your colleagues who are weighing up right now whether to back you or to suggest that you should go? And if I may, would you back continuing to block Andy Burnham from trying to return to Parliament?
Well, Chris, there's a lot packed into that question. Let me just... What I'm doing is setting out the response, the direction that we need to take, and the acknowledgement that in the world we live in now, we need a bigger response than 2024. It is a different world, and an acknowledgement that this isn't the first shock the country's been through with the Iran conflict. We've had plenty of those in the last 20 years, but every time... the government of the day has tried to get back to a status quo that doesn't work. And we're not going to do that this time. That is the urgent task facing our country. We were elected into office to change this country, to bring about the change that is needed. The frustration that has been spoken about is a frustration of at least 20 years, if not more. That is what we're charged with changing. That is what we will change. In relation to Andy Burnham, obviously, any future decision is for the NEC. Andy's doing a great job as mayor in Manchester. And I actually work really well with Andy, and I'll give you two examples. On Northern Powerhouse Rail, which is really important for the North West, we are working together on that project. But equally, we've stood together to support Manchester, the community, when we had the terrible attack on a synagogue last year. Andy was the first person I phoned, and I went straight to Manchester to work with him on our response. So we work very well together, but the actual decision would be one for the NEC. Thank you, Chris, very much. Beth, from Sky News.
Thank you. Prime Minister, back in 2021, when Labour lost hundreds of council seats in the Hartlepool by-election, you thought about resigning as Labour leader, explaining, and this is quoting you, "I didn't feel I should be bigger than the party." But these results, this moment, is so, so much worse than then. You've lost nearly 1,500 councillors, 40 councils, you've lost Wales. Haven't you, for one moment, thought you should step aside in the interests of the party and country? And if you haven't, why haven't you? Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Beth. I think what we witnessed with the last government was the chaos of constantly changing leaders. And it cost this country a huge amount. A huge amount. And I'll tell you who paid the price. It was working people. They paid the price of this. They are still paying the price of this. A Labour government will not inflict that on our country again. We were elected with a mandate to change this country because of what had gone before. And that is what we will do. Yes, I acknowledge the frustration. Yes, I acknowledge the results are tough. Yes, I acknowledge that we lost brilliant representatives across the United Kingdom. And I have a responsibility for that. But I also have a responsibility to deliver the change that we were elected and that we promised this country. And I'll deliver on that. Thank you very much, Beth.
What Fix said to you this weekend.
Fix is a rock, and we talk everything through together, as you know. Robert Peston from ITV.
Prime Minister, these were arguably the worst election results for Labour in 100 years. And, you know, I spent all weekend, as you'd expect, talking to your MPs and ministers. And, you know, most of them said to me that they do think your time is up. So what would persuade you that you're not the best person for this job? And just on this issue of this is no longer the time for incremental change, when you were elected, we'd had 15 years of no growth. We'd had Putin's war that led to the worst energy spike in history. Many would say Brexit had failed. Why didn't you get it then?
Well, Robert, look, I'm not going to shy away from the fact that I've got some doubters, including in my own party. And I'm not going to shy away from the fact that I have to prove them wrong, and I will. I had my doubters when I took on the Labour Party. I had my doubters. They said we couldn't change this party and make it capable of winning an election. And I proved them wrong. And when we did that, I had my doubters who said, you can't lead us to a general election victory after the loss in 2019. It was so bad. It's not possible. And I proved them wrong. And I'm going to prove them wrong again here. I also feel a deep sense of personal responsibility to deliver on the mandate that we won at that 2024 election. The first Labour government for 14 years that had to come in and clear up the mess and build a better Britain. That is what I came into politics to do, and that is what I will deliver. Thank you very much. And Robert the Second, on the incremental. Look, you heard what I said about Scunthorpe. This is an example of the urgency and the pace and the type of decisions that we need to make. The same with Europe. A bigger response, a bigger argument that has been made before, because we're living in different times. The Iran war comes on top of all the other crises we've faced for 20 years. We have to learn the lesson. Every single time in the past, we've simply tried to get back as quickly as possible to a status quo that didn't work. We can't do the same again. That's why we need a bigger response. Thank you very much, Robert. I've got Catherine Foster from GB News. Catherine.
Thank you. Catherine Foster, GB News. Prime Minister, the Labour Party was founded to represent the working class, many of whom voted for Brexit because they felt left behind. You've said yourself that the status quo is not working, but you're standing here in London and you're promising more Europe. You lost so much of your core vote in the Red Wall, in Wales, in Scotland, because working class communities feel that the Labour Party has abandoned them and that you don't get it. Are they wrong?
Well, Catherine, thank you very much. On Brexit, the reason I reminded everyone what Nigel Farage said is because that was the promise he put to the country. That we'd be stronger, we'd be richer, we'd have lots of money for the NHS, immigration would come down, and it all proved to be false. And he doesn't take any responsibility. He's not going back to the country now saying it was a good thing, you've all benefited. He'll talk about almost anything else apart from the consequences of the one thing that he delivered for the country, Brexit. He doesn't want to talk about that. And there's a reason for that. It didn't help working people. It turned out what he said wasn't true. And that's why he doesn't want to talk about it now. But we have to talk about it now. Because we have to address the situation we're in. We have to give this country a stronger economy, a stronger defence and security set of arrangements, given the world we are living in. And that's why I said what I've said about being closer to Europe and this government being defined by bringing Europe back together again and Britain at the heart of Europe. Thank you very much, Catherine. I've got Pippa from The Guardian. Pippa.
Prime Minister, I've got a specific question for you and a wider one, if I may. The specific one is, if one of your MPs launches a contest, a leadership bid against you, will you fight it? And the wider one is, do you think that Britain is ungovernable? And if so, why? And who's to blame? The media? Your MPs? The government? You? Thank you.
Yes and no. No, I'm not going to walk away in relation to the first part of your question for the reasons I've set out. And no, I don't think Britain is ungovernable. On the contrary, one of the things that I draw great strength from is all the millions of people who care passionately about their place, their community, where they live, where they work. The millions of people who give hours and hours and hours of their time for their community, volunteering, helping others, running teams, you name it. That is a great strength of our country. I draw strength from the fact that we are a reasonable, tolerant, decent country, a live and let live country, a diverse country. That is the real Britain. That's not an ungovernable Britain. That is the Britain that I will fight for, particularly in light of the opponents we now have politically, different to the opponents that we had before. That is the real Britain. That is the Britain I love. That's the Britain I'll fight for. Thank you, Pippa. Jim Pickard from the FT. Jim.
Jim Pickard, FT. Prime Minister, you say you don't want incremental change, and you say you want Britain to be at the heart of Europe. Are you ruling out, however, Labour manifesto at the next general election, including single market or custom union membership? Because without either of those things, our economy is very much not in the heart of Europe.
Yeah, well, Jim, what I want to do is take a big leap forward with the EU-UK summit this year and take us closer, both on trade, the economy, defence and security. And that will then be a platform on which we can build as we go forward. And as we do that, I strongly believe we've got to turn our back on the arguments of the past, not open old grievances, but look forward together to how we make this country stronger, how we make this country fairer. And so that's the approach that I will take. I've got Audrey from The Times. Audrey.
Good morning, Prime Minister. Aubrey Allegretti from The Times. To follow up on a previous question, you said that whether Andy Burnham comes back to Parliament is a matter for the NEC. Your business secretary said as much this morning, but he also said that it would be a distraction and that Labour shouldn't be fighting unnecessarily elections. Do you agree with him? Do you think Labour can afford to have two by-elections in Greater Manchester for the mayoralty and wherever Andy Burnham returns? And also, if I may, over the weekend, I think you gave an interview in which you suggested that you would like to be Prime Minister for a full 10 years. Some Labour MPs have been unhappy with those comments. Do you still stand by them?
Well, on Andy Burnham, my answer, Aubrey, is the same. That will be a matter for the National Executive Committee if and when the issue arises. But just to be really clear, on a personal level, I've worked very closely with Andy in our respective roles now. The first person I worked for when I came to Parliament was Andy. He wanted me in his team in the Shadow Home Office. I wanted to be in his team in the Shadow Home Office. So we work very well together. We'll continue to work very well together. If the issue arises, it'll be a matter for the NEC. On the decade, look, what I'm doing is spelling out the scale of the challenge that we face. It's the same argument I was making before the election, which is after the damage of the last government, it will take time to clear that damage up and to build the better, stronger country that we need. And that's the decade that I've been talking about. Look, do I recognise that we've got to turn this around? Yes, of course I do. Do I realise that we've got to respond to these elections in the way I've set out in the speech I gave a moment to? Yes, of course I do. And what I've done today is set out how I intend to address that task. Thank you very much, Aubrey. I've got Sophie from the Mirror.
Hi, Sophie Huskisson from the Mirror. Thank you, Prime Minister. So do you agree with Angela Rayner that this could be your last chance to change course and save the Labour Party's future? And do you think the party should move more to the left to become, as you put it, a stronger version of Labour? And if I can just ask as well, since the losses in Wales and Scotland, have you spoken to Leonard Morgan and Anas Sarwar and what was said? Thank you.
Let me take them in reverse order. I've spoken to both Eleanor and Anas. I'm not going to go through the conversation, but I have spoken to them, as I've spoken to many of those brilliant representatives who didn't get elected this time, and to council leaders across the country. I've spent a good deal of the weekend having those calls, but those calls did include Eleanor and Anas. In relation to the task of turning this around, look, I do understand the enormity of the task that we face. We inherited a terrible legacy from the last government, economically, public services, the NHS on its knees. And what we found when we got into government was even worse than we feared.
And one of the mistakes I think we made was we wanted to level with the country about how bad things were. But we didn't convince people enough in that early period of the change that we would bring about and why their lives would be better. And that's why we have to change that and inject much more hope and optimism into what we are saying. And so I think Angela and I agree, and I've spoken to Angela as well, by the way, so I know exactly what her thinking is in relation to this. Thank you very much. I've got Jack from The Sun.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Jack from The Sun, just on that point, when you did speak to Angela Rayner, did she rule out ever launching a leadership challenge against you? And also, you said in your speech just now that if you were ousted as Labour leader, it would plunge the country into chaos. Some of your critics say your government is already mired in chaos, but can you be clear about what you mean? Are you saying that because it is you with the mandate, if you were ousted, there would have to be a general election?
Well, Jack's a lot bound up with that. I did speak to Angela. I'm afraid I'm going to disappoint you by not going. I've spoken to Angela many, many times, by the way, in the last few weeks. We are friends. We get on very well. But I'm not going to go through each and everything that we discussed in those calls. But on this question of chaos, look, the question whether if a government constantly changes its leadership, the question whether that damages the country is not an academic question. It's not something that you study at university and go through various theories. We tested it. We tested it to destruction under the last government, and it inflicted huge damage on this country. A Labour government will never be forgiven if we repeat that and inflict that on the country. And that's what I mean when I say I'm not going to plunge this country into chaos. Jason from the Mail.
Thanks, PM. That was a heartfelt speech. Your own MPs, though, at the end of last week were saying that you were detested on the doorstep. Those are their words. They said that people are no longer listening to you and that it doesn't matter how many heartfelt speeches you make, your unpopularity is dragging this government down. In those circumstances, don't you owe it to them to step aside and give someone else a go at keeping these forces of darkness at bay?
Well, look, I acknowledged Jason a moment ago. There is frustration across the country at the status quo, which isn't working. There's frustration that politics is not working for too many people. And yes, there is some frustration with me. I acknowledge that. But that frustration that I'm describing has been built up over many, many years by people who feel that their lives are not getting better, that their city centre, their town centre, the place where they live, doesn't look any better for them, that their children aren't going to get better chances than they got. That is what's driving that frustration. That is deep, that is political, that is the challenge we have to rise to. I mean, it's not a frustration that can be just cast aside easily. It's deeply bound in the status quo that has failed for so many years. And that's why we have to turn that around. And I've got Bethan McGinley.
Hi. Bethan. Hi. So you've talked a lot today about giving young people hope again. But for many young Britons, things like home ownership, secure work and financial stability still feel further away than it did for previous generations. Why should they believe that this government can reverse that?
Well, I think it's such a good question because I think young people have been very badly let down, whether that's on opportunities at work. We've got the best part of a million people, young people, not in work. That's going to have a huge impact on them for the rest of their lives. People who can't get on the housing ladder very quickly or at all. And we have to instill the hope in them. We do that by changing what we're doing to help people get into work. We do that by taking better protections for renters. Too many young people are spending a lot of their income on rent. Therefore, they can't save their money to pay for a deposit. We're changing that with the Renters' Rights Act, which came into force just a week and a bit ago. And we're changing that with the hope of a better future and the sense in which they will be able to work, travel and study in Europe in a way which hasn't been possible in recent years. And in the end, those young people are our hope, because that's why I gave the example of my mum and dad. And it's a very real example, because I think, you know, very many people, when they get towards the end of their lives, do reflect and say, you know, what was my life about? And for my mum and dad, in material things, they didn't actually have a lot to show for their lives, but they had this deep comfort. I could really feel it, this deep comfort inside, that they, my mum and dad, Rod and Joe, that they had contributed to a country where the next generation would have better chances. That is the real hope and optimism in young people, and that's where it resides with me, because I think, as I said in the speech, that's the greatest hope of all. So thank you very much for that question. Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Keir Starmer bringing it in almost on time, but it would be a little pot kettle of me to criticise. We'll start picking over that in a moment. Just a little game you might want to play with me. It's now 10 to 11. There is one element of that speech that I can't stop chuckling about. It's relevant to something that we touched on Friday that crystallised and became almost uncannily prescient in the course of the weekend. But there's one thing from that speech that is, to me, in my childish way, absolutely hilarious. And I wonder if you can work out what it is. I'll probably tell you after this.
This is LBC.
At the third stroke, the time from BT will be 6 o'clock, precisely.
Today in the UK, 850 small businesses will make their first sale. 1,300 homes will be connected to full fibre broadband. 100,000 calls for help will be answered.
999 with service.
4 million cyber threats will be prevented. And countless messages will say, good night, love.
At the third stroke, the time from BT will be brilliant.
BT, behind brilliant things. Data includes BT Group customers.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different. Should be fun. Or wobbly. Or wet.
The wet suit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxing.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home. That was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book advanced single tickets from London St Pancras to Cambridge from only £11. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply.
Picture your car. You want to sell it, but you feel trapped by the chains of your finance deal. Now, listen closely. Hear that? That was the sound of your car selling and the cash hitting your account. It's easy to sell your financed car on Motorway. We'll handle the admin and pay off the finance for you. It's not magic. It's Motorway. Sell your car today at motorway.co.uk. Process may vary in case of negative equity.
Tackles the crunch and theatrical diving. Rivals on terraces sobbing and crying. Last minute winners that change everything. These are a few of our favourite things. When you're singing, yet not winning. When your bet's gone bad. We simply remember our favourite things. And then we'll feel so glad.
For all your favourite things, visit BetVictor. 18+, gambleaware.org. Please gamble responsibly.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC. With James O'Brien.
And we're here again. 10:53 is the time. So Keir Starmer has just delivered a speech which is viewed in many quarters as being something of a premiership saver, or at least was intended to be, hoped to be that. I like the final bit. It's weird how this breaks us down, you know, how this divides us. I like it when he talks about his parents, the warmth and the authenticity of those comments. To me, is to be fair, although it came right at the end of that exchange, right at the end of the media questions, I thought it was him at his most human. Some people hate it. I don't know whether it's a psychological thing or whether it's linked to your own relationship with your own family, but some people hate it when he draws upon his familial experiences. I'm not sure what else you're supposed to draw on when you're explaining what shaped you and what made you. But there was nothing in that speech, I'm afraid, that you would describe as substantive or game-changing. I mean, there's some stuff that you might file under better late than never, getting around finally to calling Nigel Farage both a grifter and a chancer. The nationalisation of British Steel is a big story, but it's something that has been thrust upon them, I think, rather than something that they have elected to do. The stuff about being at the heart of Europe, great, but, you know, what does that mean? The elephant in the room of British politics for some time now is that the chances of meaningful growth are negligible, if not nil, while we remain out of the single market. Listen, I know some people either don't understand that, and I'm not being condescending, or refuse to accept it if they do understand it. And I'm more likely to be condescending to those people, the actual charlatans and fraudsters, than I am to people who've been let down by the British media. But as long as we are outside the single market, the UK economy is not engineered for meaningful growth. You might be able to deliver some fantastic payouts to cryptocurrency billionaires who may or may not have donated secretly £5 million to the person that they want to be the next prime minister. But in terms of meaningful growth for normal people, it ain't going to happen as long as we are outside the single market. And he knows that. Everyone in his cabinet knows that. And he still can't say it. So you get the, well, I don't even know what word I would use. You get the almost platitudinal insistence that we will be somehow closer to Europe. There are myriad problems with that. Most obviously, it ain't up to us anymore. Thanks to Rees-Mogg and Johnson and Farage and Dorries and all the rest of them, most of whom have now signed up with reform, it's not up to us anymore. We get what we're given. We do what we're told. The idea that we will rule takers, not rule makers, was one of the biggest lies of the Brexit movement. But it's true now. And of course, as long as our electoral system, as demonstrated last Friday, is all over the shop, I'm looking at 10 wards, 10 council wards in the UK, where five parties got more than 10% of the vote. That's absolutely bonkers if you did an A-level in politics in 1990 like I did. Five parties in 10 wards getting over 10% of the vote. That's how madly open everything is. And as long as there's a realistic chance of somebody who continues to lie about the European Union, well, either because they are doing Vladimir Putin's bidding wittingly or unwittingly, as long as you have that spectre in place, the European Union ain't going to do much to help us get closer to the heart of Europe. I love the line about shared interests, shared values and shared enemies, but almost everything good in that speech, if you are supportive of the British government, you would file under better late than never. And everything bad in it was the same badness. It was the vagueness and the absence of substance. So, I mean, other things that you file under better late than never. Finally getting around to recognising that people planning to march in this city next Saturday are racists, and they are wooing racists, and they love racists, and the idea of Labour politicians pretending that they are people with legitimate concerns as they dance to the tune of a multiple criminal is comical. But again, why didn't you do that 2 years ago? Why didn't you say the stuff about the single market 2 years ago? Why didn't you say the stuff about the heart of Europe 2 years ago? Why didn't you say the stuff about Farage being a grifter and a chancer 2 years ago? You talk about the shared interests, values and enemies, crucially, that we have with our European allies. Why didn't you do it 2 years ago? Why are you only doing it now? So you break down according to either better late than never or, sorry, mate, I've run out of road. I don't know where I am at the moment. Would you scream at me if I suggested I was 52, 48? There's not a lot there. I mean, it's one of the best speeches he's given. But once you reach the point where you're giving one of the best speeches you've given, and it's not a brilliant speech, and it's not necessarily going to move the dial or the needle at all, then where are you? Where are you? I mean, everything he said was true. We are teetering on the brink of a very dark period in British history. But whether or not he's done enough to drag people back from that brink, I don't know. He's failed to persuade them to come back from the brink by pandering to their prejudices and aping the populists and the racists who have seduced them. But what's he offering them instead? I don't know. I don't know. I was moved by the line about his parents deriving enormous comfort from the knowledge that they have made the country a better place for the coming generations. That is, for me, and don't laugh, you can mock me, that's almost a definition of my politics in emotional essence rather than in policy-driven principle. What is it that you want from a government? I just want things to be better for my children's generation than they were for mine. Or I want things to be better for your children's generation than they were for yours. And I don't know that that's going to happen. So there's a lot to get through. It was authentic. It was powerful. But it wasn't perhaps enough. I don't know. But I do know this. I've got two questions for you. The obvious question is, what did you make of the speech? But with that, we need a sort of side order, don't we, that recognises the fact that most people aren't going to have listened to it or watched it. They're going to be relying upon online headlines and the rest of it for their interpretation of what happened. Starmer cozies up to Europe. Starmer betrays Brexit. Starmer abandons Brexit. And the second thing is, something I don't often ask you, but I will today. What do you want? Seriously, what do you want?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer has acknowledged that people are frustrated by the state of Britain following last week's dire election results.
I have my doubts, as they said, we couldn't change this party and make it capable of winning an election. And I proved them wrong. And when we did that, I have my doubts, as they said, you can't lead us to a general election victory after the loss in 2019. It was so bad. It's not possible. And I proved them wrong. I'm going to prove them wrong again here.
Making what was considered a make-or-break speech to reset his premiership, Sir Keir has promised Labour would be better and also do better. The Prime Minister also announced plans to nationalise British Steel and proposals for closer ties with Europe. Speaking in London in the past hour, he also took aim at Reform UK and the Green Party, who made major gains in last Thursday's polls.
We're battling Reform and the Greens, but at a deeper level, we're battling the despair on which they prey. Despair that they exploit and amplify. So we will face up to the big challenges. And we will make the big argument, the Labour case, that neither Nigel Farage nor Zach Polanski offers our country the serious progressive leadership that these times demand.
The Labour backbencher Catherine West has threatened to try and trigger a leadership contest in the wake of Sir Keir's speech today. The North London MP says she'll canvass support if his address leaves her dissatisfied. Do stay with LBC for the very latest. One other story this morning, 22 British passengers are starting a period of self-isolation after being evacuated from a cruise ship hit by hantavirus. They arrived at Arrow Park Hospital in Merseyside last night after being flown to the UK from Tenerife. Officials say the group will be assessed for 72 hours before self-isolating for another 45 days. A French passenger on board the cruise has since tested positive for the virus and is now in hospital in France. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up 25 points at 10,258. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain in southern areas, cloudy with sunny spells elsewhere, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Because you bought your robot vacuum on your Barclay card, you got 0% interest for up to 24 months, which makes watching it, hypnotically sweeping up your crumbs, even more satisfying. Oh, missed a bit. What you buy is your business. Helping you pay less interest is ours. Barclay card, backing your future. Subject to financial status, new customers only. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable, 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on £1,200 credit limit. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 11 is the time. What did you think of that? And what do you want now? 03456060973. A little bit of context. Don't phone me with your lunch orders. I've been listening to Keir Starmer's speech. If you're just joining us, you'll have to rely upon other people's reports as to what went on. But what do you want now? There are two distinct questions there. What did you think of what you got? And what do you want now? And I want your answers to come from a kind of thoughtful position. I mean, the simple idea that I want apple pie or I want a general election or whatever it might be is I think it's well represented on social media, but it's not really very valuable for our purposes in trying to actually plot the course ahead. What did you think of that? And what do you want now? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. Julian is in Maidenhead. Julian, what would you like to say?
Sorry, I just wanted to try and get my order in. Onion bhaji, naan,
get on with
and garlic chicken. I thought, to me, it was okay. Mm. It was decent. Unfortunately, I'm not the huge swathe of people that need to be convinced. And unfortunately, the people that need to be convinced are not... I don't think they're open to hearing that from Starmer. I don't think it rings with anything. He's not...
So there's nothing he could have done. The ship has sailed.
Unfortunately,
yes.
What I think the country needs, I think Starmer's kind of delivering it. But you can't correct a ship that's been going off course for the past almost two decades. You're not going to do it within a year or two. It's not going to happen. Anyone who says it will... is talking absolute nonsense.
And well, they're populists. They're popular. Was it Beth Rigby who asked about whether or not the country was ungovernable once again?
Yes, I
in
think
the absence
it was.
Of Natasha Clark getting a question, which is absolutely unforgivable when you look at the size of the audience that this programme and this radio station enjoy. But
it's typical of this of post-Brexit Britain,
isn't it? Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. But Beth Rigby's questions were probably the best, and she did look at that ungovernable thing, and there is something in that, isn't there?
So the people
that will rise furthest in an ungovernable country are the people promising simple solutions.
Promise the world, promise unicorns, promise wealth for everybody, and it's just not going to happen, and it's not going to happen overnight. But the populists will say it. Starmer won't. He won't say it. He'll come up with something. He's not a charmer. He is, but there are other people who are far more charming, but who are far less diligent, far less decent, far less obsessed with making things better. They'll just want to line their own pockets or just...
To be fair, in Nigel Farage's case, he already has. He's already got at least £5 million secret. I don't know, and that's all we know about. I mean, goodness knows... whether or not there are any other secret donations from foreign-based billionaires. I don't know who bet against that.
I don't think it's
going
to stop anytime soon.
What do you want?
I kind of really like the fact that we weren't an object of ridicule for every other country. I'm of foreign origin.
Yeah.
I'm not natively... My parents were not born here. My first language was not this one that I speak. It was a different one. So I've spent all my life dealing with continental Europe and other countries, and I've been proud to be, because I speak several languages, I've been proud to be a sort of ambassador for this country, saying we're not all monolingual, some of us speak several languages quite well. But after Brexit, I had to walk around apologising because everyone just thought, oh my God, you've made such an absolute mistake, this country. And I was embarrassed, and everyone was making fun of us. Brexit served one purpose. It convinced everyone not to do the same thing because it has been an absolute catastrophe of a political plan.
Yeah, I mean,
divorce yourself from your nearest neighbour.
Well, we're in favour of it. Frexit and all the rest of it. It's disappeared from political discourse. You've got very, very right-wing politicians on the march in some European countries, none of whom ever posit leaving the European Union. Even Viktor Orban, as he did everything in his power to sabotage and scupper the European Union, never really posited the notion of leaving it. Not a lot there on the what do you want, but plenty, Julian, on the what did you think. I continue to try to ride both horses. You remind me of an interview that Sadiq Khan's just given, actually, in which he says, if you're a nativist, you believe in mono-ethnicity, you believe in mono-religion, then London is the antidote and the antithesis, because we are diverse, we are pluralistic, we are liberal, and we are incredibly successful on any objective criteria, which is, of course, what boils the blood of the kind of people who've directed the political discourse in this country in recent years. One person I did think of during that speech was Elon Musk. He must be absolutely delighted that the needle of British politics has moved so far to the right that the Prime Minister has to now call out the kind of racists and grifters who would once have been very much fringe and marginal figures. But such is the toxicity of social media in general and post-Musk Twitter in particular, that the Prime Minister can no longer go down that road. He has to actually point and shame. Let's go to... I've got two correct guesses on what it was about that speech that even now you can hear from my voice. I hope you can. I'm just thinking about it. It's not quite Guy Goma territory. Do you want to know a secret about the Guy Goma appearance on this programme? Can I share this or not? Is it a bit unprofessional? Eleanor, you decide. It's not quite Guy Gomer territory, but every time I think about the thing that I'm thinking about now, I'm going to smile in the context of that speech. Only two people have correctly guessed what it was. You can play by texting 84850 or WhatsApping the usual number. Veronica is in Sutton. Veronica, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, first of all, I don't know what you're thinking, you're talking about, so I'm curious to know what's making you smile.
Can you guess? Think back to that speech.
Well, actually, there are a few elements. But anyway, let me first give you my reaction. My first immediate reaction was relief. My relief that he wasn't standing down today, because I thought, you know, with all the pressure he was under over the weekend. Regarding the speech itself, I mean, for Starmer, that was a good speech.
Yes.
For a normal orator, it was... You know, I mean, he's not great doing speeches.
No.
But on the content, the things I appreciated from it is, first of all, everything about EU. And I mean, your first caller has gone over that, so I'm not going to go over there. And he's calling out Brexit. He was calling out really strongly about the sins of Brexit.
Yes.
And what happened. So I was really pleased to hear that. The second thing, though, he called out the populism and about the hate march, the march, you know, the Tommy Robinson march. That I'm thinking he's going there. He's taking the battle to the populism. Thank God, about time.
And you don't have your enthusiasm for that polluted by the failure to do so sooner, because if it were a matter of pure principle, it would not have been diluted by pragmatism, would it?
I think he was trying to ride two horses, and now he's had a wake-up call. I think he realises he cannot be... he's got to stick to a wake-up call. He's got to stick to true Labour principles. And to be honest with you, the back door is the Green Party, you know, so he's got to, if I was, you know, advising him, he's got to be more concerned about the Green Party, because the reform voters are never, he's not going to get those people back. Let them go. But what he's got to do is shore up. What I want from the future, though, is, and I don't want to swear here,
Don't. Goodness me, it's not you that gets into trouble, is it? It's me and Eleanor.
We cannot afford a psychodrama, this inward political drama. We need, this country needs stability. You know, we went through Brexit. We've had multiple PMs. For God's sakes, we need to just let them get on and do their job.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 52, 48 on that after Friday. I just, you know, the negativity that he personally attracts is the story of almost every doorstep from Labour canvassers. And Labour candidates. And yes, he can prove people wrong and turn oil tankers round, but I think it's a little bit more than a sort of, yet another Tory round of infighting. There is a sense of existential dread. I think it's more sort of, Ian Duncan Smith territory, perhaps, even though he's in power, not opposition, than it is, Rishi Sunak territory. I don't know, though, because, you know, I have this catchphrase, Veronica, good for business, bad for the soul. And all of this is good for business. People like talking about it. It's important to discuss it. But 48% of me agrees with you completely. So can we just focus on let's talk about what the nationalisation of British Steel means. Let's talk about what the European Union might allow us to do by way of accelerating and enhancing that relationship. But we won't. We will continue inevitably to talk about the sideshow, if you like, because it is... in some ways more important than what's happening on the stage. Is he still going to be Prime Minister by Christmas? Veronica, thank you. I'm going to tell you. Shall I tell you what the thing is that keeps me chuckling?
Yeah, go on.
Did you notice who didn't get a single mention in that speech?
No.
No? I'll give you a clue. The person who was the real winner on Friday... The person who never makes any gaffes. Okay, let me try again. The person who became working class when she worked in McDonald's.
Oh, God, Kemi Badenoch.
Yeah. Not a single... Yeah, the leader of His Majesty's opposition.
It's completely made her irrelevant.
Well, I don't think he's done it, to be fair. I mean, I don't think she needed any help at all. But I opened Friday's show with my tongue wedged in my cheek, saying the only thing that we're waiting for now is for Kemi Badenoch to come out and claim that she's the real winner. And she spent the entire weekend claiming to be the real winner. A tactic so effective that the Prime Minister didn't think it was even worth acknowledging her existence when responding to the election results on Friday and setting his course for the future. I thought when I asked you that question, my inbox would go, better not, better not, better not, better not, better not, better not, better not. But it didn't. The response in my inbox was very, very similar to Veronica's, which was a sort of version of, what? Oh, yeah. Sean's in Birmingham. Sean, what would you like to say?
First of all, Kemi Bader not the real winner. Sorry, that's funny.
Look at the tweets, mate. Look at the posts, the social media posts.
It's... Yeah, I took a couple of days off and it seems I've missed the real drama, the real winner. But so the starting point on this is, I mean, that speech is interesting. I was almost surprised by your pessimism, quite honestly, with that speech, because I'm sort of in the same place as you with that, in that it was a great speech for Starmer, but at this point
I mean, it may be that there was no speech he could give that would have buttered the parsnips that you want buttering.
Yeah, that's it. That may have been it for me. But yeah, I think it was really interesting. And I think what when he does those family links, I definitely do sit there thinking, yeah, that gives him that sort of humanity that I think is why Starmer gets these criticisms of Wooden a lot. But going on to, the main things he was talking about in that speech, the issue is he did begin to diagnose the problem that I've been seeing, an element of the problem that I've felt for a long time, is that, yes, people aren't hearing the right things from the Labour government, but the biggest issue that he sort of jumped over, which I would have liked him to talk about more, is about feeling. So how are people feeling? People aren't feeling the change 2 years on positively. I think we've spoken about this before. You know, monthly disposable income in the reality once all your expenses are gone is just at a point of it's becoming more and more painful. And I think
it's not a lot he can do about that in the short term, is there?
No, this is it. But I think that you wouldn't want to get ahead of the King's speech, but let's be honest, there was nothing there that indicated.
That's on Wednesday, for people who don't know. We'll be taking that on LBC Live on Wednesday. So, yeah, you're right. He couldn't make a massive announcement. They teed up, I mean, the nationalisation of British Steel, as I say, is more a response to circumstances and events than it is a policy diversion or a policy pronouncement. He teed up, Europe as being, or his people teed up Europe as being the big pivot or the big point, and it was words, not policy, wasn't it, that he came out with. I can derive some comfort and encouragement from the fact that he went further with the words than he ever has done before, but not enough comfort to move the needle particularly.
Absolutely, and the public ownership and public interest bit that he said in reference to British Steel was interesting, because again, I'm just thinking, remember how popular Corbyn was at the time. What was that for? It was these policies of, bringing back our fundamentals back to be done for the public interest, not for profit. And, British Steel is a very, very small starting point, which, as you said, they've been dragged to it. But people want to hear policies that are going to be done in their interest to make that difference, and there's nothing in that speech again that really moves that dial at all.
Well, what do you want? I mean, you've kind of answered that question already, but do you want him to go? Do you want him to be replaced? What do you? Because you think deeply about these things, Sean.
I mean, quite honestly, at this point, I genuinely think, even if it was Angela Rayner, who, I guess would be my pick, as a Green supporter, that, closer to the left, I don't think, all of these criticisms of Starmer, it's this new Labour movement that, regardless of whether you get Streeting, Rayner, Burnham, or this Catherine West no one heard of until the other day.
That's not true. And even if it is true, it's not important, because stalking horses traditionally are not household names. I think it was Sir Anthony Mayer, possibly, who began the process that finally got rid of Margaret Thatcher, and I bet you still don't know his name.
No, that's it. And I definitely can't imagine a world where I imagine that was more to Paul Streeting to make a...
Well, she was a principal. She got fired, I think, by Corbyn because she refused to vote to leave the single union and customs market. And she asked customs union... one of the questions in the House that actually began the ball rolling for Boris Johnson. So just because... I mean, you probably hadn't heard of the MP for... Denby Dale, who introduced...
No.
I feel like I'm cautioning you, which you don't really deserve, but I just think the fact that we haven't heard about... The fact that we haven't heard of someone much before, or you haven't, doesn't mean that what they're doing today is not significant. It's the point I'm
making. Absolutely.
Yeah,
no. Fair enough. But I do think... sorry, I've lost my train of thought.
That's all right. It's because I kept interrupting you. You don't want to change. You don't think a change would necessarily change anything.
The way I look at politics now, and I think this is what the local election results have shown us, is it's not going to be Labour that stops reform. And that's the one common interest that we have. Mm. And I think it is going to be down to the Green Party, quite honestly, to do that. Now, there's stuff that needs to happen there, and that's not the point of this conversation. But
sure. Labour won way more seats than the Greens did, didn't they, in total?
Yeah,
but they lost more than anyone's lost ever, pretty much. But I don't know. So if he is in the business of trying to woo Green curious voters or Green voters, then they will not have liked him lumping them in with Reform voters.
No, and that was something that it stood out to me. It's like, you know, to try and caveat us as the same threat to the country is ridiculous, let's be honest. But I think the weak Green and weak Reform, the statement that he made, and, you know, rather, no, we need to leave that away and be strong Labour, I do completely agree with. I think it's, you know, we saw it with the asylum stuff where they've tried to satisfy the electorate, and I think they do need to focus on what offerings they have, why they've had the support they have.
Because I don't think they're ever, I mean, this is what we did on Thursday, actually, I think. Oh, well, not Thursday, we weren't allowed to talk about politics, but one of the phone-ins we did towards the end of last week was about the fact that he has delivered what they say that they want when it comes to immigration figures. And, of course, what Farage will do is pivot away to disabled people or poorly people or unemployed people and start claiming that they're the ones who are nicking all your biscuits, while the people who have got all the biscuits keep funnelling millions and millions of pounds to his private account quite secretly. But, hey-ho, I just keep pointing it out, even if many people insist that they can't hear me. 20 minutes after 11 is the time. Thank you, Sean. Phone lines are open. If you're struggling to get through, remember, as soon as Sean hangs up, it frees up a phone line for you. Questions are, what did you think of that? And crucially, what do you actually want next? And we'll look also maybe at the Europe question. At 11:45, I've got that chap coming on, who I told you about last week, Munya Chihuahua, who has made a documentary for Channel 4 that is on tomorrow night, looking at... OK, I'm going to say a word, and if you have been paying attention to this programme over the course of the last week, you will know exactly what's coming up next. And that's all I'm going to do. I'm just going to say the word. OK? Kayfabe. Is that the right word, Keith? Yeah? Kayfabe.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the LBC app.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful gut health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Is your cat drinking enough?
Discover Purina One Hydrolife and help support their daily hydration with a taste they'll enjoy. Purina One Hydrolife. Make it easy.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 22 minutes after 11. Kayfabe is the professional wrestling practice of portraying staged events, storylines and rivalries. We took an amazing... we did one of our maddest phone-ins ever last week, didn't we, when we only took two calls. not through choice because I'd done a 58-minute monologue, but rather through necessity because they were both so good we didn't have room for anybody else. First of all, it was Ash, the former merchant seaman who now trains merchant seamen, giving us an absolute masterclass in what was happening and what was likely to happen next in the Strait of Hormuz. I think it's fair to say that his analysis of the Strait of Hormuz is up there with my analysis of Brexit. None of his predictions have failed to come to fruition. And then Helen rang in from Manchester to explain about wrestling and kayfabe and the relevance that it has to Donald Trump, something that Johnny Vaughan introduced me to first in the corridors of this building, which I didn't take perhaps quite as seriously as I should have done. Because to understand Trump, you have to understand the world of professional wrestling, up to and including the point that the wife of the founder of the WWE is currently his Secretary of State for Education. Secretary for Education. Education Secretary. So one of the funniest people I've come across in recent years, Munya Chihuahua, has made a documentary for Channel 4 looking in greater detail at this relationship between wrestling and Donald Trump. And he'll be joining us at 11:45 today. Before that, I get a lot of messages, you know, and I take criticism fairly well, better than I used to, telling me that I am an absolute fraud, a charlatan and a cheat for not covering the stories that you feel I should be covering and would be covering were I not in the pocket of Big Pharma or various other and on this occasion you are right. I have managed to get somehow to 25 minutes after 11 without mentioning at all what was by far the biggest story of this weekend. So first of all, I would like to apologise. I'm very sorry. And second of all, I would like to make amends. Here it is.
It's done. It's Kidderminster's moment. They are back in the National League. And you can see just what it means. Pure emotion, all the pressure, week on week, building to this.
Oh, man, he's not wrong. So if I think about the fact that Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, gave a 25-minute speech without once mentioning the Leader of the Opposition, Kemi Badenoch, I can feel a giggle building up inside me. I listened to that footage of the full-time whistle up in South Shields on Saturday, and I can feel a sort of borderline euphoria building up inside me. And as I suggested to you on Friday, I didn't go because I'm worried that I might become a jinx. So congratulations to everybody at Agbara, but obviously to Adam Murray, the manager, and the squad first and foremost, and also to the excellent Richard Lane, the chairman, who's now secured two promotions in 4 years, albeit promotion to the same league because we came back down again last time. But still, two promotions in 4 years isn't bad for a chairman, is it? And indeed, Paul puts it best. He says, Keir Starmer should resign and appoint Adam Murray. He at least retains the confidence of his dressing room. A reference there to the promotion-winning manager of Kidderminster Harriers, who brought me untold joy this weekend. Anyway, enough about that. Back to the... Hey! From South Shields to North Shields. That's where Stephen is. I suppose you weren't shedding any tears on behalf of your near neighbours on Saturday afternoon, Stephen.
Hi, James. Good to speak to you. No, I wasn't. Although, congratulations to Kidderminster. That's great.
Thank you very much. Now, what made you pick up the phone?
Well, it's a couple of things. You were asking what I sort of liked about Keir Starmer's speech, and I thought it was great to hear him.
Did like.
Was that he did really sort of have a go at reform and really started to point out the hypocrisy and borderline, well, beyond borderline corruption of the likes of Farage.
Probably can't say that out. I mean, certainly secretly accepting £5 million may have an appearance of moral corruption and it poses questions about his integrity, but there's no suggestion of law breaking at this point.
Enough.
Yeah, just to clarify.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And you know, unfortunately, the Commons Commission, no matter what they find out, there will be no criminal charges. It will only be potentially a slap on the wrist, but hope we get.
But he used the words grifter and chancer, so you're filing that under better late than never.
Absolutely, yeah. And to talk about the division and stoking division and the use of these topics by the parties, and obviously lumped Green in there with the with reform when it came to the politics of division.
Do you? Let me get this right.
Yeah.
So when they wooed. And I think it was Morgan McSweeney's master plan, but Starmer went with it. So, you know, he doesn't get to wash his hands of it just because he's washed his hands of McSweeney. Mm. When they sought to woo these people, when they sought to say that people going on the actual hate march were sort of legitimate citizens with genuine concerns, and they sought to sort of pander to these prejudices and this propaganda. That wasn't a deal breaker. The fact that you're letting him row back now to where I think you and I probably think his natural instincts lie, but they played with fire when they started trying to woo those people. So you might say better late than never. Other people might say, I'm sorry, you lost me forever when you went down that road.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's the case for myself. I'm very much on the green side of things now.
Yes.
Basically because I believe in compassion and I believe in decency. And I think, you know, in terms of what I'd like to see from Labour, it is a complete turnaround on their vicious policies, their anti-immigration policies, Shabana Mahmood's disgraceful policies, in my opinion. And the sort of othering and blaming of immigrants for all the wars of the country as a distraction from dealing with the real issues. And I think all they've done is pitchroll for reform, made it more acceptable to discuss these things and more acceptable to support these things. And I think that's just, goes against what I expected Labour to stand for.
Yes.
And certainly, you know, appalls me to the point of, contemplating whether I could ever support them again.
Well, no we're trying to out-reform reform is the simple way of putting it. I don't know that anyone can dispute that that is what we've been looking at for the last 12 months or even perhaps the last 2 years. And whether or not this represents a sea change in that will depend, as you say, more upon policies than it does upon pronouncements. So you've answered both questions, what you thought of the speech and what you want from them. Did you know, there's a little bit of me, Stephen, and I don't want to talk myself out of whatever paltry relevance I may currently enjoy, but almost every conversation about British politics that doesn't put the single market right in the middle of everything is relatively pointless. You want to talk about economic growth, you want to talk about shared defence values, you want to talk about commercial interests, you want to talk about citizens' freedoms, you want to talk about mobility, movement, all of those things. It's mad that we're still 10 years later living in a country where it almost feels as if he had to take a deep breath, close his eyes and jump off the top diving board before he could actually say that Brexit was a bloody disaster.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's probably political, I don't know, there's an inertia, and I don't think it reflects public opinion. I think the public opinion has moved very much towards, being open to some element of rejoining, whether that's single market or customs union, or even a full rejoin. But I don't think anybody's testing the water sufficiently to really get that picture.
No.
They've got their heads in the sand, and they're determined that, we've got to stand by that vote of 10 years ago, to all intents and purposes, built on a huge amount of lies and misinformation. Why can't we revisit that? Why can't we have that sensible grown-up discussion and even another referendum?
Yeah, funny someone had written a book about why we can't do that, Stephen. And of course, I felt that Keir Starmer was very unfair to Nigel Farage, which is not something I say very often, when he suggested that the only thing Farage won't talk about is the failure of Brexit. Because, of course, he also refuses to talk point blank about the £5 million that he secretly received from a foreign-based millionaire. I can't remember. One of the names he goes by is Christopher Harborne. Made a ton of money out of cryptocurrency and would make a ton more if Nigel Farage were to deliver on some of the policies he's already mooted as a potential prime minister. I think his other name is It'll come to me in a moment. So, come on, Sir Keir, a bit more integrity, please. How dare you suggest that the only things Nigel Farage won't talk about is Brexit, when the other thing he won't talk about is the £5 million that he secretly trousered from a foreign-based billionaire who would be set to make unimaginable sums of money in the event of you becoming Prime Minister. Do you know, he actually sat in that chair over there, Farage, and bigged up the company that Christopher Harborne owns 12% of when he was on with Nick. No way Nick could have known that. But that's the thing about Farage, is that eventually he embarrasses everybody. Some of his cohorts, some of his closest colleagues forced at the weekend to asked whether or not they were confident he hadn't taken any other secret donations from millionaires and billionaires. And, of course, they can't answer that question because they don't know. And in the case of one or two of the people that have risen quite high in his party, you have to wonder whether they've given him any money. I'm just asking questions. But you do, don't you? You look at the kind of Nepo babies that have triumphed in Nigel Farage's party and the amount of money they have given to the party, you have to wonder whether, like Christopher Harborne, they've also sort of sent a little bit of moolah, sent a little slice into his current account as well. But I'm sure he'll be clearing all of that up at the very first opportunity. And if you believe that, I've got a bridge that you might like to buy. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has promised to prove his doubters wrong as he battles to save his job as Prime Minister. In a speech in London this morning, Sir Keir said he'll do better and also took responsibility for Labour's damaging election results last week. The Prime Minister also announced plans to nationalise British Steel and forge closer ties with the EU. Sir Keir also said his party will only win as a stronger version of Labour, not a weaker version of Reform UK or the Green Party. Medical staff at a quarantine site in Merseyside are monitoring 22 British passengers and crew evacuated from the cruise ship hit by hantavirus. They arrived at Arrow Park Hospital last night after being flown to the UK from Tenerife. And President Trump's dismissal of Iran's counter-proposals for peace talks has seen the price of oil spike again. Tehran reportedly wants to separate talks on ending hostilities in the Strait of Hormuz from more complex issues like its nuclear programme. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain in southern areas, cloudy with sunny spells elsewhere, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC.
Have you spotted anything?
Only seagulls. Are you sure this beach is a nature reserve?
Well, the sign said, nature this way. Hey, what's that big bird over there? Flapping its wings, unusual markings.
You sure that sign didn't say naturists?
Oi, this is a nudist beach.
Ooh. Now, where are my binoculars?
Cheryl?
Struggling to read in the sun? Get 2-for-1 at Specsavers and make prescription sunglasses your second pair. From £70 with standard single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Do you do cashback?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Two?
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
Hey, Marcus Waring here. Cooking a balanced meal is my forte. But did you know most of us aren't getting enough omega-3 in our diets? Life often gets in the way. So I top up with 7C's Omega-3 Max Strength. It helps support my heart, brain and vision so I can keep doing what I love. 7C's Omega-3. Keep doing what you love.
Daily 250mg EPA and DHA supports normal heart function. Daily 250mg DHA supports normal brain function and vision. And NDNS 2019-23.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:36. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Well, I don't know how much of the speech you heard. Of course, the further we drift away from it, the more likely it is that you weren't with us between 10 and 10:45 when Keir Starmer was both addressing the nation and taking questions from His Majesty's media. I have to be conscious of that because there's a temptation to talk about nothing else until Sheila gets here with a brief interlude shortly wherein Munya Chihuahua will talk to us about his new film for Channel 4 looking at the extraordinary relationship between Donald Trump and professional wrestling. So, I mean, either we will do that, in which case I have to slightly rejig the question, or at least put more emphasis on the second half of the questions that I'm asking this morning as opposed to the first half. So the first half is, what did you think of that? And the second half is, what do you want now? Do we actually know what we want? It was Pippa Crerar from The Guardian, not Beth Rigby, who, isn't it brilliant how a plurality of the best political journalists in this country now are women? I'm not being weird. I'm just pointing out that that was simply not the case when I joined journalism, let alone when my late father was in it. But Pippa asking a brilliant question about whether or not the country is ungovernable. It's not a phone-in, unfortunately. If it's not a phone-in, because you might turn it into a binary. Okay, is the country ungovernable? Yes. Next caller, no. Next caller, yes. So I don't know that it would be a very fertile phone-in. But it's a fascinating question, and it's contingent upon that central point, or two central points that pop up on this programme on a regular basis. The first is the promise of the far-right populist, as opposed to the left-wing populist. The far-right populist promises you racism, misogyny, and climate change denial, along with, latterly, transphobia as well. And that is such a heady brew, an intoxicating mix that many people, as we have seen in the United States of America, are prepared to overlook reality itself, because the hit they get from the racism, the misogyny, and the climate change denial is so huge. And Farage very much going where Trump has led on that one. But the other side of that is the country ungovernable. It's not independent of that populist process, but it is the single market. It is the fact that geographically and economically, this country is hobbled by not being in the single market. It is objectively insane. It was insane when we talked about it in 2015 and 2016, and it's insane now. I saw some I saw some pictures at the weekend of people when they were going. Do you remember that weird little "Let's Go WTO" episode? And people who had absolutely no idea what it meant were successfully persuaded when Johnson was wanging around going on about no deal being better than a bad deal, a statement of such unutterable idiocy that even Nadine Dorries probably understood that. No, scratch that. Even Jacob Rees-Mogg probably understood that. But the absolute madness of the people who were jumping up and down waving "Let's Go WTO" placards and things like that sets the tone 10 years later for a country where we can talk about all the things that matter without, economically at least, talking about the thing that matters most. Which Keir Starmer finally got around to doing today, but what he can actually do about it, I'm afraid, at best remains to be seen, at worst is diddly squat. 20 minutes to 12 is the time. We are planning on bringing back the reform roundup. Obviously, we were required to put it on ice during Purdah. I think it's going to be too big a job for Henry Reilly to undertake single-handedly, so we may need a new name for it. I thought we might go for the road to 5 million. Can we find, between now and the next general election, 5 million stories highlighting the racism, the idiocy, the dishonesty, or the criminality of people that have been brought into public service by Nigel Farage? 5 million. The road to 5 million, I thought we might call it. 5 million Farage, perhaps. We're looking for 5 million stories detailing the anti-Semitism, the racism, hideous racism already, in one case, the criminality, the basic corruption, the moral corruption, the actual corruption, the lies. And don't forget, of course, that the vetting at this with this outfit is absolutely brilliant. We know that because Nigel told us. Who's going to keep count? And what do we do if we get up to 5 million? If we get up to 5 million, what do we have to stop? What if there's 5 million and 10? 10 people could get away with it. But that's the name I'm going for at the moment. We can't call it Reilly's Reform Roundup anymore, because Reilly isn't going to be able to do it all the time. He's got shows to present and, you know, a proper job to do. So I'm looking at 5 million. The road to 5 million is what we're thinking of calling it at the moment. But you're welcome to come up with your own suggestions. And, of course, speaking of your own suggestions, the phone lines are actually open. And if you want to tell me, A, what you thought of the speech, and B, what you want now from Labour, from Keir Starmer, from your government, then the number you need is 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Peter's on the Wirral. Peter, what would you like to say?
Hiya, James. Just for context, I did listen to all of the speech this morning.
Good.
and the questions later. I was in expectation of something special being said this morning.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Was really disappointed.
Yeah.
It seemed to be regurgitating what they've been saying before, and they're all very valid. I'm not discounting it. The young people, the minimum wage, the low paid, all of that, Europe, but we've heard it before with him. Other than British Steel, there was nothing there that said, this is what we're going to do. It was, this is the issues we've got, But yeah. Trust me, I'm going to fix them. But do you know what really disappointed me, James? The bit they left out.
Go on.
They left it. You mentioned it earlier when he started speaking about his mum and dad and their expectations for their siblings to do better. I thought he might have just moved that a little bit further and spoke to me, my generation, and a younger generation who have children who do expect that. But we are paying the extra taxes that we're being asked to pay, and every year we are. You know, the freezing of the tax threshold means as a pensioner with a small pension, every year incrementally I'm paying more tax percentage-wise than I did last year. I'm happy to do that because that's what I understand is needed. I'm happy to do that to see what it is. Do you know what? He never mentioned us. He never once said, do you know what? We know what you're doing, guys, and we really appreciate it, and you know why you're doing it. And he never mentioned it. He left us. To me, it just seemed to leave us as if we just pay, you know, just...
It's an amazing thing, that, isn't it? Historically, not just politically, but I mean, I think it goes back to Mark Twain, doesn't it? Death and taxes being the only certainties in life. But taxes never portrayed as something, as a subject of pride. And I don't know that I can join you in criticising him for not turning that oil tanker around, because it would be such a huge pivot to say to the taxpayers of this country, be proud that you are helping to settle the bills and seed the ground for the coming generations. I don't know what it would achieve, because most people, unlike you, feel aggrieved by the tax that they pay.
I understand that, James, that there are a lot of people being told that. But the narrative from the other side of saying, why are you being asked to pay these taxes? And this is the benefits that you as a person now are going to hand on to your family, to your generation.
Someone will pop up and just say, oh no, nonsense, it's all going to the Skivers and the refugees. And you know that they are lying.
But they do that anyway. The fact that they're not saying it is a problem for me.
I see what you mean. Yeah. And there's no counter-narrative to the populism and the propaganda. No. What did you think? Because a few people are unhappy with the perceived lumping together of Green and Reform. I'm less unhappy with it than some of my correspondents, not because I think he's comparing Green voters to Reform voters, but simply because he's comparing two leaders to each other who seem to offer quite simplistic solutions to complicated problems. But if he's in the business of trying to win over people who voted Green on Friday, that may not have been the wisest thing he could have done.
No, I agree with you on that. But I also agree that, for me, the jury's out on Mr. Polanski at the moment. It's this simple answers. You know, if we squeeze the billionaires, you'll get lots of money. Well, you know, that's not how the world works. You know, and we've all got to understand that. We have to live in the world we inhabit, not the world of the ideology. And I think that's where we need to be moving away from. This is why
the populism is the what they have in common, isn't it? I don't know whether you take it back to 2016 or whether it's a bigger issue or an older issue, but the idea that people are now able to believe what they want to believe to the exclusion of either objective reality or history and tradition, as you point out, is one of the many, many problems that Keir Starmer is up against. 11:46 is the time. You only need to look at America to understand that. You just shout "Make America Great Again" at the top of your voice and refuse to acknowledge any questions asking what that actually means, and the next thing you know, you're president for the second time. It's almost as if the entire Trump regime is an exercise in professional wrestling tropes. Oh, what an extraordinary coincidence. Munya Chihuahua, who's just made a documentary for Channel 4 about how the entire Trump regime bears extraordinary resemblances to well-established professional wrestling tropes, is up next.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
All eyes on the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer. Let's turn to one of his senior colleagues, Peter Carr, who's Business and Trade Secretary, and joining me now.
There is nothing inevitable about failure or success in politics. You make the weather, and this is a moment where Keir has the opportunity
Reflection in the mirror this morning, shaving. Did you question why yet another ally you're being marched up the hill to really try and defend the indefensible? Did you look yourself in the mirror and think, why the hell am I doing this?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Are you ready for the McCrispy to become your new go-to. With juicy 100% chicken breast, one bite and your usual becomes your used to. Betray your go-to for McCrispy. Now at McDonald's. Saved from 11 a.m. Subject to availability.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. So who's ready for the best summer yet? Visit sunny Cyprus and tuck in to fresh Mediterranean food. Unwind on golden beaches or sip fine wines in a local vineyard. Plus, with our flexible durations, you can stay as long as you like. So book Cyprus now. Jet 2 Holidays. Package holidays you can trust. Patronage protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day can win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialized in installing our fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condenser. Perfect for modern apartments, conservation areas, listed properties, or simply for those who don't want an ugly unit on the outside. Head to coolyou.london. Daddy, daddy cool. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
10 to 12 is the time. A welcome diversion from contemplation of Keir Starmer's, I think you could say, desperate attempts now to hold on to his job. But if you disagree with that analysis, then we have still got room for your contribution later in the programme. But before that, this.
We're going to America because there's a connection between Trump and wrestling.
What do you think of the theory that pro wrestling might have influenced Trump?
Everything he does is the psychology of pro wrestling.
He's applied WWE storylines to politics.
Saying the things that gets the crowd to boo and giving them what they want.
You know right away who the bad guys are. He makes it easy for you to feel that.
It's actually close to surreal that last week we introduced each other, well, you introduced me to the word kayfabe, which I had not actually, I'd managed not to come across previously. And then a sort of cautious nudge of the idea that the relationship between Donald Trump's regime and his sort of modus operandi and WWE, professional wrestling, was something worth examining. And then it just exploded in our hands while we were talking about it on the radio. Johnny Vaughan had suggested to me that I needed to pay more attention to this. Linda McMahon, of course, has become education secretary while having previously been known only really for her involvement with professional wrestling. And Munya Chihuahua, one of the funniest people around at the moment, who I'm not even on TikTok, but his clips and films somehow managed to invade my consciousness and make me laugh, proper laughs on frequent occasions. You'll know his work. He has already delivered a documentary on precisely this subject. Just as I was picking up the phone on you to pitch it to somebody, here you are with It's On Tomorrow Night on Channel 4.
Dude, great minds. Birds of a feather or birds of the same spandex wrestling tights.
So you began,
yes,
as a wrestling fan.
Absolutely. And what was so surreal is, you know, I had tucked wrestling away in the sort of treasure chest of nostalgia. You know, I'd grown up with it and I decided, right, it's time to step away. So imagine how I felt now when I see Hulk Hogan ripping his vest at a MAGA rally. Then I see Triple H in the White House, and then Linda McMahon, Secretary for Education. I couldn't connect the two in my brain. And it's only through going through the deep dive of the documentary do you realise it's been in plain sight all along.
Wow. What are the big kind of themes? What are the key? Because you need to speak to both people who have followed wrestling, which is a lot of people, and people who haven't, which is also a lot of people. So some of the stuff I found really helpful, actually, it crystallised. It made sense. I look at people like Robert Kennedy and Hegseth, the defence guy, and I could not imagine how anyone would ever appoint them to senior roles in an administration until I was introduced to the notion of building a stable of wrestlers.
Yeah, and I listened into that. Well, first, during the documentary, you have to understand the mechanics by which wrestling operates, because we think it's just body slams and elbow drops, but to earn that catharsis of sort of physical violence, you need to build a story. And there are devices for doing that. The smack talk, which are these quotable threats. The Rock was the king of smack talk. You've got the foreign heel, which is the deliberate stereotyping of the foreign outsider. You know, in wrestling during the, you know, you had like a Japanese Yokozuna, the Iron Sheik, who was Iranian-American, Muhammad Hassan, who was post 9/11 used to carry out a terrorism storyline, despite being an Italian-American. And then you've got the kayfabe, which is what you've spoken about, which to my view is kind of the soap operatic element of wrestling, which is blurring the line between fiction and reality. So once you find out those are the tools wrestlers are using, you then ask, have I ever seen any of that in Trump's political strategy? And the short answer is yes.
And you couldn't stop finding evidence. I mean, once you're looking for it, it's as if you are immersed in it, right? Because the links are, I mean, absolutely complete.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first and foremost, you know, Trump already had an affinity to wrestling because, as we know, he loves a strongman. And wrestlers are the strongest in many ways. He hosted WrestleManias, he took part in a WrestleMania. And then one theory that we float is, what if that time he took part in a WrestleMania, which for a while was the most viewed pay-per-view of all time, maybe that was the first time he was able to stand amongst thousands of people and doing the wrong thing was the right thing. Smack talk, which ordinarily wouldn't fly outside the ring, suddenly was gaining him like these gladiatorial, coliseum like chairs.
Lock her up. Exactly. Would that be smack talk?
Absolutely. Sleepy Joe, Crooked Hillary.
Of course, give them all nicknames.
Exactly. That's the dehumanization process. The foreign heel, you know, saying all Mexicans are rapists or Haitians are eating cats and dogs. That is creating the foreign heel. And when that happens in wrestling, what you'll find is the crowds are screaming USA, USA. That's what happens in the ring. And in this political context, or at Israelis, it's the same thing. And it almost deafens out any nuanced thinking, because all you can think about in that moment is your patriotism and wanting to protect your way of life.
What about this idea that those of us who have never been enthusiasts for WWE or any of its sort of precursors or competitors, that it's obviously not true, but it is true at the same time? It reminded me a little bit of Trump's line about Fifth Avenue, being able to shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and not lose a single vote. It's because everybody knows that this is happening, but at the same time, nobody knows that this is happening.
This is exactly it, man. This is what we talk about when we speak about kayfabe. So to put it into context, right, you know how people say wrestling is fake, okay? And like, how could anyone possibly believe this? It's not necessarily as fans that we did believe it. It was more that we made a mutual agreement with the wrestlers to suspend our disbelief because it was more enjoyable. As a kid, I watched Kane bury his brother alive. You know, I was in year 9 mourning the death of The Undertaker. I watched, Vince McMahon being blown up in a limo, and I thought it was real, but maybe a small part of me didn't.
Yeah.
And kayfabe in wrestling makes a great story, but in politics, it's Kevlar. Because what it means is, you can never be wrong or right. If you make a ludicrous statement and then you go on to fulfill that policy or pledge, you're a hero. But if it falls flat, I turn around to you and I go, we're stupid for believing it. That's on you.
That's incredible.
So when you win, you're the victor. When you lose, you're the idiot.
That's alternative facts, fake news in a nutshell. In fact, you see it now with Iran. I know the war kicked off after you'd finished making the film, but you see it from one day to the next. It's a ceasefire on a Monday. It's an escalation on a Tuesday. It's all over on a Wednesday. They're going for a drink on Thursday.
Yeah.
And then it recycles. It's rinse and repeat. And it matters, but it doesn't matter. It's true and it's not true. How do you? Because I mean, by trade, you're a satirist and a comedian. I haven't seen the film yet. I'm going to watch it tomorrow night on Channel 4 at 10 o'clock. How do you... You don't satirise this. You just go into full Louis Theroux type mode, do you? Or?
Well,
you can't satirise this.
True. I mean, look, there are some key differences between me and Louis in that, for example, I have the American bald eagle stretch across my crotch at one point before stepping into the ring. But we do satirise to a degree in the sense that, you know, with the foreign heel arc, for example.
Yeah, of course.
We play the parallel between how Vince McMahon would use the foreign heel to generate ratings. And Trump is the same. You know, there's like a sort of Ghostbusters-esque parody where it's like, do you need to improve your ratings?
Yeah.
Blame foreigners. You know, that's the tagline of the song. So, you know, intuitively, wrestling is a pantomime tradition and it's such, you know, it lends itself to comedy quite freely. But you're right, James. It's becoming harder to satirise because...
Generally as well.
The weight is heavy.
Yeah, of course it is. And not just in the context of this project, but in terms of how do you satirise the world at the moment.
Exactly. You know, after the local elections, I had a message shortly after and someone had gone, you know, are you happy with the results today, Sausage? You'll be back on the boats with them in 2 years, right? And here's the thing. It's like when I have satirized in the past figures like Farage or any political leader, more often than not, it's not for my gain. It's because collectively, whatever happens, we're the victim. Like we're all going to have to deal with that together.
Mm.
And so, you know, sometimes people think it's the battle of the echo chambers. That's what politics has turned into. You know, that adversarial nature, that binary nature of good versus evil. That's what we are now as an electorate.
Gosh.
And it makes no sense because we're meant to be the tag team. If everything goes wrong in Westminster, it's us who have to team up in the protests outside to say, no, we want to change. But at the moment, we can't even have that discourse. And, you know, James, back in the day, I hate that this is nostalgia now, but when it was Labour versus Tory, Labour supporters and Tories could be in a pub together
sure.
and sort of roll their eyes at each other. But now, if predominantly Reform voters are out on the streets, and any other political belief is out in the streets, suddenly we need a police line to stop us throwing bricks at each other. Like we're, as an electorate, that's a loss for all of us. You know, and so satire for me has become less about almost pointing the finger at the obvious enemies
yeah.
and reminding us that we need to, when we vote, it's not even about making a vote to spite your neighbour. It's about making a vote to help you. To despite your neighbour. It's about making a vote to help your neighbour. You know, don't vote to spite your enemies, vote to help your neighbours. Because if you don't do that, there's no way we can unite against whatever result comes out.
And we've seen where it can lead, as you would have experienced when you were in the United States of mm-hmm. America. Were you surprised by anything? Because it's such a cohesive thesis. It's an amazing thing. Like, if you were an academic, it was almost like every book you open, you'd be going, yep, that proves I'm right, and yep, that proves I'm right. It's like the WWE MAGA crossover is so complete. Did anything take you by surprise?
I was surprised by how effective wrestling techniques are out in the real world.
Yeah.
You know when you used to watch wrestling, right? And you'd see someone like chucked off a cage through a flaming table.
Mm.
No matter what you saw, every show was bookended by don't try this at home. And I used to think as a kid, I was like, well, I'm going to do a cheeky backdrop on a trampoline, or I'm going to throw someone into the bouncy castle at my next party. But for example, we went to visit a drinking club for MAGA fans, which was called Trumpsters Triumph Tuesdays, which makes no sense as a name. And it was just watching these people and speaking to these MAGA fans very open-mindedly
yeah.
and hearing them say things like, he's a man of the people. He's a working-class billionaire. He's a blue-collar billionaire.
Ooh.
All of these oxymorons, and really seeing the effect of kayfabe in making people believe that if they fell down in the street, he would be there to help them. It's like watching Superman
yeah.
and then approaching the actor and being like, I'm really struggling to pay my mortgage at the moment. Could you lend me a fiver? You know, it's just, it works. Kayfabe works. And so now I realise when wrestling said, don't try this at home, it wasn't just the moves, it was the storylines.
I can't wait to watch this, but I've got one concern. I'm not going to come out of it a WWE fan, am I? Life's too short. They've already got enough box sets queued up to stream.
LBC fans have been waiting to see you in a singlet for years now. Give the people what they want.
But who would it be against?
Let them know what O'Brien's cooking.
Thank you so much. Channel 4, 10 o'clock tomorrow night. The show will be broadcast, Wrestling with Trump, which even the title wrote itself. It's great to see you. I wish we'd met before, because I seriously, you need a big laugh in this day and age, and you've delivered many, many to me. Just tell people where do they find you the rest of the time.
I mean, I would say just type in Munya Chihuahua, but I just know that's impossible. The other day, someone spelt my name mundane. So I've given up.
Oh, man.
I've actually just given up, James. Okay. Just type in Chihuahua Zimbabwean and see what comes up.
Chawawa. It's been a pleasure, seriously. And
thank
good,
you,
good luck with the documentary. Extraordinary. Aligning of the planets. It's 12:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Sir Keir Starmer has promised to prove his doubters wrong as he battles to save his job as Prime Minister. In a speech in London this morning, Sir Keir took responsibility for Labour's damaging election results last week. He acknowledged that incremental changes won't cut it for those who've lost faith in the party.
We lost some brilliant Labour representatives. That hurt. And it should hurt. I get it. And I take responsibility. But it's not just about taking responsibility for the result. It's about taking responsibility to explain how, as a political and electoral force, we will be better and do better.
The Prime Minister also announced plans to nationalise British Steel and forge closer ties with the EU. Further details are expected to be outlined during the King's speech on Wednesday. Addressing Labour supporters, Sir Keir said that his party will only win as a stronger version of itself, not a weaker version of Reform or the Greens.
We are not just facing dangerous times, but dangerous opponents. Very dangerous opponents. This hurts not just because Labour has done badly, but because if we don't get this right, our country will go down a very dark path.
The Labour backbencher Catherine West has threatened to try and trigger a leadership contest in the wake of Sir Keir's speech today. The North London MP says she'll canvass support if his address leaves her dissatisfied. Do stay with LBC for the very latest. Medical staff at a quarantine site in Merseyside are monitoring 22 British passengers evacuated from the cruise ship hit by hantavirus. They arrived at Arrow Park Hospital last night after being flown to the UK from Tenerife. President Trump's dismissal of Iran's counter-proposals for peace talks has seen the price of oil spike again. Tehran reportedly wants to separate talks on ending hostilities in the Strait of Hormuz from complex issues like its nuclear programme. And the German energy firm E.ON has said it has agreed to buy its rival OVO. It says the potential deal, which is subject to approval, will create Britain's largest supplier. The price of the merger hasn't yet been disclosed. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading up four at 10,237. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain in southern areas, cloudy with sunny spells elsewhere, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Canal Adventures in St Pancras.
That's a new one for us.
Oh! Kids, cafe's this way.
Oh, eat your heart out, Venice. This is lovely.
What's that? Yes, I have both Captain Hats for the boat ride.
Train back.
So that was two pastries, one boat ride, and no tantrums. Result!
Love this shot of them driving the boat.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 6 minutes after 12. Can you guess what I said to myself before Munya came into the studio? Don't mention blank. Don't mention blank. Don't mention blank. Like an old bloke having a conversation about something he doesn't really understand. I'm not that old, but I am compared to him. Okay, having a conversation about something he doesn't understand, desperately reaching for a cultural reference point that would make me feel a little bit less at sea. I mean, even in my own workplace, I'm getting blank faces looking back at me. I kept saying to myself, don't mention Big Daddy. Don't mention Big Daddy. Don't mention... Still got blank faces looking back. So that's what I think of when you say wrestling. I have friends' little brothers who were really, really into WWE and stuff like that. And obviously I know who Hulk Hogan is. But that's pretty much it. Oh, and the other one, Stone Cold Steve Austin. And there's another one as well. Or is it Stone Cold Steve Austin? There's a pinball machine in the arcade in Wells Next the Sea that is based upon a WWE fighter. And last time I checked, I had the fourth highest score. If you want to go and have a look, J-O-B on the high scores. It won't be there anymore. I haven't been for a couple of years. But I don't have the vocabulary of professional wrestling. So I reach for giant haystacks and Big Daddy. But I thought I can't say that because A, it will be irrelevant, and B, it will just demonstrate that I'm desperately trying to sound like I know what I'm talking about when I don't. So go me, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, I think it probably was. So the ones that have ended up in Hollywood movies, obviously I'm aware of. But anyway, I digress. I just thought you might. But yes, you're right. Loads of people got that correct. It was Big Daddy or Giant Haystack, says Jamie. It was Giant Haystack, says Roddy. Giant Haystack, says Adam. Lot more response to that than there was to my question about why Keir Starmer's speech was unintentionally hilarious. Or possibly intentionally. And the answer was, Kemi Badenoch, who I think we can all agree was the real winner in Friday's elections, Kemi Badenoch didn't get mentioned once. That's extraordinary. It's not funny on one level, because it speaks to the fragmentation of politics and the rise of populism. But goodness me, I've told you before, and I'll tell you again, I wish I could bottle whatever it is that Kemi Badenoch represents and have a little swig of it every morning before the show, because that level of delusional self-belief is absolutely extraordinary. Maybe it's so intoxicating, that level of delusional self-belief, that it will become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If she acts genuinely, she doesn't look like she's thinking, right, I'm going to have to pretend this has gone well. You never get that sense that before the cameras start rolling, she's off set going, come on, or doing those things that she was reported to have done with the sort of motivational phrases into her own mirror. You are a strong and powerful woman. You are amazing. You have won these elections. You don't get the sense that she's doing that. It seems to have worked. She seems to have reached a point where the motivational pep talk into the mirror of the Linton Travel Lodge, for example, it seems as if it's worked now. She says, well, I don't need those anymore. I am a strong and powerful woman. I did win the elections on Friday. So she goes into these interviews, she goes on the stump, she goes out in the into the public, having just delivered absolutely catastrophic election results, and truly believes that she's done brilliantly. It's magnificent, because if you weren't really paying attention, you might believe her. You might, I'm not going to look at the numbers. Why would I look at the numbers? Never mind the numbers. Feel the enthusiasm. Feel the joy. This could work. You mark my words. She might turn it around sheerly by the power of delusion. Genuine delusion. I am winning, but you're in last place by a country mile. Yes, but I'm actually winning if you dig into and you think. And the next thing you go, the next thing you know, is you're sort of going, thank you. Well, I mean, it can't be as bad as it looks, because there's no way, if it was as bad as it looks, there's no way she'd be so upbeat, right? If it's as bad as the numbers tell me, there's no way she'd be doing a lap of honour at the moment. But she's doing a lap of honour at the moment, ergo, as the Romans might have said, things can't be as bad as they appear to be, because she is clearly celebrating something, which means, logically, there must be something to celebrate. And the next thing you know, I kind of think, oh, she's not that bad, is she? She's doing it. I don't know, but my goodness me, at the moment, it is just, I'm going to use a word I don't always use in these sort of, when I'm talking about politics. It's actually beautiful to watch. It makes me smile. It just makes me chuckle. And here we are. Prime Minister doesn't consider the leader of the opposition to be worthy even of mentioning. Something there, isn't there, that's a little bit kayfabe about Kemi Badenoch, maybe. If I was Donald Trump, I'd probably come up with a new nickname now and call her kayfabe Badenoch, but happily I'm much bigger than that. Back to the phones and the question of A, what you thought of the speech, but of course I now have many people listening who won't have heard or watched the speech, which means I have to acknowledge your existence as well. Unlike Keir Starmer and Kemi Badenoch, I acknowledge your existence and I am interested in what you have to say. So question number two is, what do you want from Labour now? What do you want from Keir Starmer specifically? And question number three, no prizes for guessing what the third iteration of this morning's phone-in is going to be, all dancing around the same maypole. Do you want a change? Do you want a change? Do you want him to go? Yes or no? If yes, then why? If no, why not? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. So, what did you think of today's efforts? What do you want from them now? And do you think, which is contingent really upon the second question, and possibly informed by the first, Do you think it's time for him to go? Because I'm not there yet. I couldn't really be more disappointed in so many ways with so much of what has gone on. And today's speech, forgive me if this upsets you, but not really offering up a great deal of hope. But I don't know what would be better. And until I can convince myself in my bones that that would be better than this, I'm going to stick with this. But where are you on that question? 0345 6060 973. MJ is in Edinburgh. MJ, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. To start off with, I thought I'd bring your wrestling references 30 years closer to the present. Big Daddy Cool, a later wrestler, one of Hulk Hogan's contemporaries, was who I thought of when you were talking about Big Daddy.
Now, so, Big Daddy, do you know, here's a pub quiz thing for you that you'll never thank me for. His real name was Shirley.
Didn't know that.
No, well, very few people did. It's just one of those things that stuck in my childhood brain. His real name was Shirley, and he was just a big old fella in a swimsuit, and his great nemesis was Giant Haystacks, and Mick McManus, Saturday afternoons on the telly. I don't know whether it was fake or not, that iteration of wrestling, but I like to think that Big Daddy Cool was a little nod towards Big Daddy Shirley, but we'll probably never know. That's not why you rang in.
It's not, I just thought it was quite fun.
It is, thank you.
No, I mostly wanted to concentrate on the second point about what
you want
for now. And it's less of a specific policy thing, more of a kind of general point about politics. I feel like we are infantilizing our conversation so much, and we've made it such a, not just a polarizing debate, but such a factional debate, that we've just lost the ability to actually debate issues and about how we go about solving them. With this kind of the fairly new thing of everyone being a populist, like you've got Nigel Farage being a populist, you've got Jack Polansky being a populist, that seems to be a very easy get out rather than actually going, let's actually look at their policies, and if you don't like them, explain why you don't think they're good policies, or explain why you don't think they'll work, rather than the fact that they are a populist automatically disqualifying everything that they say.
But Pete, I mean, this is going to sound a bit rude, I suppose, but there are plenty of people doing that on both fronts. I don't know whether your algorithms are keeping them. I mean, some of the Green Party's economic advice and economic policies has been dissected in incredible detail by, I think Dan Needle's done it, the lawyer who brought down Nadeem Zahawi, and certainly Farage's promise that if you vote for me, your life will get better because I'll deport that person over the road is barely worthy of analysis, is it? It's so obviously rubbish. But
I agree with you, but what I'm not seeing is that within the political space. I'm not seeing, I think one of the reasons...
But they don't, this is opposition squared, though. They don't really offer up meaningful policies. One side is saying, blame everything, hurt the foreigners enough and your life will get better. And the other side is saying, hurt the billionaires enough and your life will get better. Now, if I have to pick a populist, I'm always going to go for the one who isn't a fascist. So if it comes down to a choice between populists, it's no contest for me. But by definition, they don't provide detail or substantive policy platform. So it's impossible to do what you suggest. You look at any dig deep into, for example, a wealth tax is a fascinating thing to do, but there's very little precedent through which to examine it, and there's very little consistency through which to test it, because when people say, if you introduce that, I won't be around to pay it, a lot of them are, as we have discovered in recent years, a lot of them are telling the truth.
That might well be true. I think I don't want to go too deep into it, but the point on a wealth tax is, the point on a wealth tax is that, yes, people might leave, but the literal assets that are here, like all of the buildings,
you'd still be able to take a slice of. But I have read analyses of this, but I don't know who you would want to be leading the charge against it, as it were. The idea that we're not examining it enough. Thank you, MJ. I'm just glancing at the clock and noting that Catherine West, the MP who was talking about triggering a leadership challenge against Keir Starmer before the speech this morning, has moved. She's made her move. Clearly not sufficiently impressed by that speech. Indeed, she has said that it was good, but it doesn't outweigh the results from last Thursday. So she is now gathering the names of Labour MPs to call on Sir Keir Starmer to set a timetable for the election of a new leader, which rather puts an entirely different complexion on my question from 8 minutes ago. Do you want a new leader? 0345 6060973. More on that breaking news story with Natasha Clark, our political editor, after this.
LBC.
Fever Tree Ginger Beer. There's no one quite like you, is there? That fiery character. Warming undertones. Mixed, you make a spirited Moscow Mule. But even on your own, you still have the most delectable kick. Fever Tree. Straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
It is 19 minutes after 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where, as I revealed a moment ago, we have some breaking news. And it involves Catherine West, an MP with an interesting record of prioritising principle over personal advancement. And I think it's important to bear that in mind as the predictable cavalcade of calls for or people pointing out that they've never heard of her. It says more about you than it does about her. What's going on, Natasha?
Yes, James. So she's just sent a letter to, a text, a tweet, at least according to the reports that we're seeing, which is basically calling on colleagues to put their names down to a leadership challenge to Keir Starmer. So she's canvassing whether she can get the 81 MPs that she needs in order to formally trigger a leadership contest.
And that is... Son's candidate. You just need the names. You don't need to have put forward a potential alternative or not.
I'm actually not sure exactly on that, but I do believe that you do need to put down a name to those challenges. I think there does need to be attached.
That might be her. She might be the one.
She may put that. Yeah, she may put it down under her name. Yeah. But I do think it needs to be attached to a name, as far as I understand the Labour Party rules, which are quite complicated. Mm. But she says that she's listened to the Prime Minister's speech, that she welcomes the renewed energy and ideas, but has reluctantly concluded that this morning's speech was too little too late. And actually, that's something else. Another MP texted me earlier today when I asked them how they thought this speech went and what their response to it was. They said, all too little too late. So I've been asking MPs all morning what they think of it. And it's fair to say it's not quite inspired them as much as I think Keir Starmer absolutely hoped that today would. And that many people now are looking to those leadership rivals, to Catherine West, to Wes Streeting, to Angela Rayner, to see whether they share those frustrations like Catherine West and feel that the time is now right for a leadership contest. It's a very febrile atmosphere in Westminster this morning, James.
Indeed it is. So Streeting kind of let it be known over the weekend that if there is a battle, obviously I'll be part of it. The rest have kept their powder relatively dry. Burnham's path to Downing Street, of course, has one rather large obstacle in it, namely that he's not currently a member of Parliament. Is there an argument for suggesting they could have waited until after the King's speech, which is only on Wednesday, and will set out the next programme for government, or not?
Yes, huge argument, James. And it's obviously, it's going to be hugely embarrassing if indeed the King does have to get up and an MP has already triggered a leadership contest for what could be the next...
Poor old King,
Prime Minister.
He's having a right old time, but he's pulling victory from the jaws of humiliation at every turn at the moment.
Exactly. And to be fair, that has been used as an argument in the past. Oh, let's not embarrass the Queen. Let's not embarrass the King in that sense. And it does work with MPs. It's an argument that's quite a tried and tested one. But equally, it doesn't... it's not one that MPs are mentioning to me, at least today, as a reason why they will not go over the top. I do think it's clear that they've got a small window of opportunity within the next few days. And that's why the King's Speech was put here, right, James? This is why the government have decided to schedule the speech for this day, to try to curb and get ahead of any leadership challenge. But equally, it doesn't seem to be working. They are still arguing about whether they're going to do this or not.
Well, I don't suppose we do really do it. I mean, in terms of the rubric, she perhaps goes forward as a stalking horse, and then if they get the 80-odd votes that they need, it's quite prosaic to read this. Please reply yes if you think this is the right thing to do.
Yes.
Your name will not be made public for now. It just seems a little odd, given that they could be choosing the next Prime Minister.
Does it read you like a bit of a spam text?
The customer service. It does, doesn't it? Press 3 for merch. Should we have a little look back at the speech that you feel... Well, in your... A considered opinion, is Keir Starmer's position the same, worse or better than it was at 10 o'clock this morning?
That's a good question. I think it's probably a small amount better. Okay. I think that, you know, if you are an MP that wants to put off a leadership contest, you will be able to point to a few things in that speech and say, you know, Keir did roll up his sleeves, Keir did give us
literally and metaphorically.
For sure, and he gave us a little bit more of what we've been asking from him. But I think many people will say, it is just not going to cut the mustard, it is just not enough, and that's exactly what my inbox is filling up with. But in terms of, yeah, the speech generally, I thought that actually he was probably stronger on the argument why not to replace him rather than the argument why he should stay. And you'll remember, James, you know, it was an argument not well made enough by the Remain campaign, and many people said that was too Project Fear at the time. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
Of course I do. So she has backed down in a way by calling for the Prime Minister to set a timetable for the election of a new leader in September. So that, was she not poised to go further than that if the speech had been even less impressive? To nominate her. She was going to ask Labour MPs to nominate her if the speech was a 2 out of 10. But if it's a 6 or 7 out of 10, she's going to ask the Prime Minister to set a timetable for departure in September, which doesn't involve a challenge immediately. And if it had been a 10 out of 10, she'd have packed up and gone home.
That's what she said yesterday. So her sort of plan was three-pronged, if it were. The first was, I want Cabinet to launch a coup by the end of the day, and if they don't, then I will put my name forward.
Right,
to
so step. That's not happening.
So the Cabinet coup hasn't happened. She then said she wanted the chair of the Labour Party to come up with a timetable for a leadership election. That obviously isn't happening either. So she's now on part three, which is that she's saying that she or another member of parliament will be launching a leadership challenge. So she is now saying that she's collecting names of Labour MPs to call on the Prime Minister to set a timetable for an election. But she does say that that shouldn't happen next. Now, this helps one person, and that's Andy Burnham, because he is not in parliament right now. So if you are, for example, thinking today as Wes Streeting or Angela Rayner and thinking that you've got a better chance of defeating just one of those candidates, the question will be now, do you come out today and say, it should be me, and it should be now, because you've already got one of your rivals out of the picture? If indeed you wait 6 months, you wait till September, there's a chance that Andy Burnham has a seat in Parliament, and that list of candidates that could beat you is growing ever longer. So that's the question that they are weighing up today.
And so if she, even if she gets the numbers, I don't think either of us are going to be clear on this, there's no actual leverage then in the absence of a challenge. She will let it be known how many people have signed up to her plan, and therefore Keir Starmer will decide whether or not that is enough people to force his hand.
Yes, well, I mean, it obviously gives Number 10 an idea of the strength of feeling, but it does not trigger a leadership contest, as far as I understand it, unless you have 81 names. And also, you get Catherine's message there. She says...
But even with 81 names, reading what she said today, I don't think she is going to...
Exactly, it's not clear that she will be the person to put her name forward, because she has to either put her name forward or there has to be somebody willing to do so. And at the moment, we do think that there are enough names, but are they going to be attached to Catherine West will be the challenger? And I think that's still unclear. But she says at the end of that message, your name will not be made public for now. The whole point of this is that these names are going to have to be made public. That's the whole way.
Otherwise,
that this
it's a meaningless figure, isn't it?
Well, that's how the Tories did it. They did it with these secret letters, and you never have to put your name to it. And people say that the Labour argument in the Labour way is a little bit better.
Labour don't have a 1922 committee, so they don't have that tradition of going to visit the Prime Minister saying you've lost the face. So this is it's curiously unsatisfying.
Yeah, it totally is, and it's not quite sort of the same sort of process. So you've got the chair of the Labour Party, Anna Turley, who could be in charge of a leadership. So instead of the men in grey suits of the Tory Party, you have the woman in a red suit of Anna Turley that could be marching up to the Prime Minister and saying your time is up. She's not doing that. She's obviously facing a lot of pressure. And I think it's fair to say that, that she understands that there is frustration with the Prime Minister, with the Labour leadership. But is there enough pressure in order to launch a leadership challenge? Well, she can't say yes until she has got 81 MPs and a name. Those are the Labour Party rules as we understand them. So she cannot act at the moment.
Yeah. Watch this space. Up to about 37 at the last time of checking.
Yeah, I think there's a few more, actually. I last saw 40 when I was looking earlier.
Okie dokes.
But yes, just to come back to the speech, I don't know if you wanted to hear any of the speech.
Yeah, go on. Why didn't you get a question?
I know. Sorry. I did ask.
I'm beginning to get offended on your behalf now.
I know. But I appreciate
that. These outfits that have got like 11 viewers or 12 readers, and we've got 1.5 million. So why the hell aren't you getting a question?
I know. Well,
Who do I need to shout at?
Okay, I'll give you some numbers after
Thank
the
you.
Show. But yes.
I'm not even joking.
I know. No,
I'll get Eleanor
big
to do
day.
It. She's
it's
much more
day.
Frightening than I am. But I mean, seriously, what's the point of having the biggest audience in the business?
I know.
Don't get a question at
for
the,
sure,
the,
for
the
sure.
Prime Minister's press conference.
Yeah, but look,
from GB.
In fairness, there was lots of other journalists that didn't get questions. There's about 40 journalists in the room. Big amount of people there. So anyway, I'll better be getting one next time or I won't be showing up. But yes, just going back to the speech, I thought that there was two interesting points. One was obviously on closer ties to Europe. This is what he had to say on whether we should be essentially going back into the customs union or the single market.
What I want to do is take a big leap forward with the EU-UK summit this year and take us closer, both on trade, the economy, defence and security. And that will then be a platform on which we can build as we go forward. And as we do that, I strongly believe we've got to turn our back on the arguments of the past, not open old grievances, but look forward together to how we make this country stronger, how we make this country fairer. And so that's the approach that I will take.
So I thought it was interesting, James, because obviously we were seeing that this speech was being built up as a big policy shift. But that to me didn't feel like a big announcement. It wasn't like him saying, hey, I'm ready to take us back into the customs union. I'm ready to do a deal. He made very much the big argument that we should be closer to Europe. But he's been making that argument for quite a long time. And yes. I think a lot of people, a lot of MPs were hoping for a bit more from that speech from the Prime Minister today in terms of actual policy announcements.
Or even an ambition. But an ambition would almost certainly be dashed by a combination of what European Union membership actually means and the British domestic political situation, making any promises negotiated by this Prime Minister liable to be blown up by the arsonist who is in line to become the next Prime Minister.
Exactly, and that leads me on to my second final point, which is that I thought actually his argument about Nigel Farage was possibly the strongest moment of his speech. Here's what he had to say about the Reform UK leader.
Only Labour values and Labour policies can ensure our country not only weathers these storms, but emerges stronger and fairer. And the Labour case that neither Nigel Farage nor Zach Polanski offers our country the serious progressive leadership that these times demand.
And arguably, I think that people do feel that his sort of attacks on Nigel Farage, I thought it was interesting, he goes for them both, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. He clearly is being squeezed by the both of those two parties, and that's an admission in his Save My Skin speech that he has having to attack to both sides. But yeah, I just generally came out of that speech thinking that the argument for why we should keep him in because Nigel Farage has to be kept out, that felt like a stronger argument than why we should keep him as Prime Minister, why the Labour Party should, you know, it felt like the positive case for him wasn't made strongly enough, and the Project Fear argument for, oh, well, what if we get Nigel Farage, felt like the stronger one. And I don't think MPs are going to be feeling too confident about that when they come to make their decisions about leadership later today.
Thank you, Natasha. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor there, offering up her analysis of Keir Starmer's speech earlier. I continue to canvass yours, and you can contribute it in all the usual ways. With that little third side order now, which has been sort of both highlighted and somewhat diminished by Catherine West's hokey-cokey. Do you want a different leader? Do you want someone else to have a go? 12:31 is the time, and Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Labour MP Catherine West says she is gathering the names of backbenchers who want Sir Keir Starmer to step down. The former minister says his speech this morning was good, but doesn't outweigh last week's dismal local election results. 22 British people on board a cruise ship hit by hantavirus are being monitored by medical staff while in quarantine in Merseyside. They arrived back from Tenerife last night and are now at Arrow Park Hospital. And the price of oil has spiked again after President Trump described Iran's counter-proposals for peace in the Middle East as unacceptable. Tehran is looking to separate talks on ending its blockade in the Strait of Hormuz from discussions about its nuclear program. LBC weather, cloud and showers in the south will clear to sunshine through the afternoon. Elsewhere, sunny spells with the odd shower in the northeast, becoming cloudier in the northwest later, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
Next.
Hi, just these, thanks. Did you cash back?
Just need to check you're not a robot first. New security policy.
Okay.
How many traffic lights can you see out the window?
Two.
No, that's wrong.
Right, well, obviously I'm not a robot.
That's what a robot would say.
What a load of malarkey. Smarty keeps things simple, like 80 gigabytes for £10. And on a rolling monthly SIM plan, you're free to leave any time. Less malarkey, more Smarty. Search Smarty Mobile.
Fancy being spoilt for choice when it comes to your new kitchen? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles and hundreds of cabinet options, so there's something for every home. Plus, choose from a wide range of leading appliance brands and beautiful worktops. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email, or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
Have you spotted anything?
Only seagulls. Are you sure this beach is a nature reserve?
Well, the sign said nature this way. Hey, what's that big bird over there? Flapping its wings, unusual markings.
You sure that sign didn't say naturists?
Oi, this is a nudist beach.
Ooh. Now, where are my binoculars?
Cheryl?
Struggling to read in the sun? Get 2-for-1 at Specsavers and make prescription sunglasses your second pair. From £70 with standard single vision lenses to the same prescription. Terms and conditions apply. See in store for details.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
12.34 is the time, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. There is a story that speaks to some of the misgivings that Keir Starmer sought to sow about Zach Polanski, the leader of the Green Party, and these stories are becoming worryingly common from his point of view. You'll be aware of questions regarding his claim not to have lived on a houseboat, but merely to have stayed there occasionally while... when it was put up for sale, it was written that he and his partner had lived there very happily for 3 years. Dan Needle, who I mentioned earlier, is digging into that, and that doesn't currently look very good for the Green Party leader. I don't know what you make of this story that the Telegraph is encouraging you to get very excited about. I find it funny, but also perhaps interesting. Populism and opportunism go hand in hand, and some populists get their opportunism forgiven, but some populists will not get their opportunism forgiven. And sadly, I've got a horrible feeling that if you're an opportunist, or rather a populist from the left, then you're going to be judged a lot more harshly for your opportunism than you are if you're a populist from the right. So this was a claim from Zach Polanski that he worked at the Ministry of Justice when he was campaigning to become deputy leader of the Greens in 2020. He wrote, currently working at the Ministry of Justice on their training and diversity programs, which sounds great. But they've actually dug into this, and this is the problem when someone digs into your CV and finds either a falsehood or an embellishment or an exaggeration. The problem for Zach Polanski is that they won't stop digging. So they phoned up the Ministry of Justice, and they said they'd never heard of him. So then they phoned up Zach Polanski's people, and they said he actually worked for the Justice Assessment Committee, which no one has been able to find any evidence of the existence of. In fact, you could go so far as to state that this committee does not exist. The only reference in the public domain to a Justice Assessment Committee appears to have been made by Zach Polanski himself at City Hall in 2024. So they went back for further comment, and finally, at the third or fourth time of asking, he admitted that when he said he was working at the Ministry of Justice, what he had been actually doing was role-playing. He'd been hired through an agency, because he's also been an actor, who provided actors to pretend to be criminals or prison guards or lawyers for the judge's recruitment process. So when you're auditioning a judge, as it were, when you're trying out a judge, you have a fake courtroom full of actors pretending to be various people. And that's what Zach Polanski was doing when he claimed he was working at the Ministry of Justice on their training and diversity program. So again, you know, whether there's fire yet is up to you, really, but there's a heck of a lot of smoke. 12:37 is the time. Darren is in Hammersmith to steer us back to Starmer. Darren, what would you like to say?
Hello, Jane. If you remember, I've got a slight stutter, so please be gentle with me.
Always.
Thank you, sir. To my mind, this morning hasn't done much because it still fails to address the thing that I think the Labour Party consistently find themselves foul of, which is remembering that most people, unlike people that listen to the show, unlike you and I, people that are focused on the detail, most people focus on the headlines, because most people, politics are quite boring. And what they routinely don't seem to cut through on is those headlines. And it allows them to get stuck with things that are out of date. And to my mind, if they want to do the politics that they need to do, which is that the slow, boring, backgroundy stuff that changes the actual foundation, things that are broken, they need something like a great YouTube channel, something that cuts through on social media, tells exactly what they've been doing in a week, and people can see that. But they don't do that. What they do is they're sort of stuck in like a yesteryear form of communication. And this speech this morning was just more of whatever the problem is, as opposed to what the solution is going to be. And that's the bit that, unfortunately, that's the bit on Friday that was quite clear, is people are desperate for the headline grabbing solution or something to explain. Not even an all. I don't think people are all. I think they've been given 2 years. They haven't cut through on the headlines. And in the second part do I want him to go? No, because I also recognise that the yo-yo of prime minister thing, it doesn't work for us. It's just not good for the economy. It's not good for anything. But I also recognise he's going to have to go because, as I said, with the Peter Mandelson thing, this guy is now the story, which means he can't get any work done. And you know, I'm more disappointed with the Liberal Democrats than anybody else. Because I think there's a lot of people like me that are moderate politics, and that's who Liberal Democrats generally appeal to. I don't really operate in the far extremes of reform or the far extremes of the Greens. And
I nearly did a phone. Do you know? Don't tell anyone what I'm about to tell you, Darren. Let's just keep it between us, all right? Thank you. So I wanted to do a phone-in about a week and a half, or just before Purdah kicked in, on why don't we talk about the Liberal Democrats more? And reason number one I didn't do it was because, of course, I'd be leaving myself open to constant accusations of being part of the problem, not the solution, even though I was asking the question in good faith. And reason number two was, it's a bit like when Ed Davey came on Friday, I don't know if you were listening, and the first thing I said to him was, doesn't it bother you that you don't get anything like the attention and the, unless you dress up as a chicken or jump out of a helicopter, you don't get anything like the attention that all the other parties get? I asked him while he was down in Portsmouth giving away free coffee. And, he said, I don't mind about that at all. And I just felt if I did a phone in on it, I'd almost be making the problem worse, not better. Do you know? Because I agree with you. He seems to me to be the most authentic party leader that we've got, or certainly in the top two, and a decent man who's driven by some really powerful principles. And yes, he sold a slice of his soul when he joined the coalition government, but that's politics as pragmatism. And he's got a ton of MPs, and he just got a really good result from a high start, unlike the other people who got good results from incredibly low starts. And yet, what can they do? What can they do to get the sort of attention that you quite rightly identify them as never getting?
It doesn't feel like they've been trying to do anything. That is the problem.
They're desperate for more attention and more coverage.
Where do you see that? Where do you see that anywhere? Where do you see that in crossing the paths? Where are the
headlines? Well, I mean, not to be indiscreet, but they will be reaching out to broadcasters, offering up Ed Davey for interviews and what have you all the time. Well, but because he's not a populist or in power, It's quite hard for people
to... Or working the headlines, and that's...
No, that's what I mean by populist. Yeah. Lib Dems announce something sensible and mildly popular that wouldn't offend anybody or involve any innocent people getting punched in the face or deported. It's not going to get anything like the attention that Farage's latest bilious belch is going to get, would it?
All that happens is it just leaves another day and another year of people that understand the problems that Keir speaks about quite correctly, and also understand that actually we don't want these sort of nasty messages of the...
I know, and the Lib Dems, I'm like you. I'm sorry for talking over you, but I just want to cross live, or not live, Angela Rayner giving a speech at the moment at the Communication Workers Union, and she's gone perhaps a little bit further than some people might have expected, telling conference that Andy Burnham should never have been blocked from standing in a by-election this year, something she probably couldn't or wouldn't have said had she still been deputy leader of the Labour Party. But of course, her own difficulties with a house purchase and failure to properly understand and pay stamp duty due meant that she couldn't stay in that role. Have a little listen to what Angela Rayner has been saying in the last few minutes.
It's no wonder that across the UK, people feel that the system is rigged against them. And the Labour Party must now live up to its name. We must be the party for working people. The Prime Minister today acknowledged the frustration that was expressed last week. But we will be judged on actions and not just our words. I'm proud of our Labour values, but they're not enough if we do not have a plan to put them into practice. It's no good acknowledging the mistakes if they're not put right. So let me be honest, conference. We as a party have to do better than this. And we can only prove we mean our Labour values by putting the common interest ahead of factionalism. And we can start by accepting that Andy Burnham should never have been blocked. It was a mistake that the leadership of our party should put right.
Well, it feels quite significant because it is a fairly hefty shot across the bowels of the party leadership, even though she was the second most senior member of it until not long before that decision regarding Andy Burnham was taken. I wouldn't read any more than that into it at the moment, whether or not you're looking at a double ticket or whether or not she's queuing up Burnham for a return. I think she's just pointing out that she is perfectly capable of both attacking and embarrassing the party leadership, and more importantly, perhaps, because we kind of knew that already, that she is increasingly prepared to do so. It's coming up to 1:45. Henry Riley back in the studio after this with, I don't think you'll get any prizes for guessing what.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Nah, he's still toast. He's just wasting our time now. The words of two in a growing list of MPs whose patience with the Prime Minister has run dry. Is there anything he said to make you want him to stay?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email, or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
The people of Britain have bought loads of noise-cancelling headphones. With a Barclaycard Rewards credit card, you could get cash back on eligible purchases and no fees on spending overseas. What you buy is your business. Rewarding you is ours. Subject to financial status, T's and C's apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 28.9% APR representative variable and 28.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Notice the change in your hearing?
Well, get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? All right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
Now with Little Plus, collect points that you can turn into possibilities.
Pepper abilities. Ooh. Pasta abilities.
Burrata abilities.
Kayak abilities.
So collect and spend your Little Plus points on hundreds of rewards or money off coupons. Lidl, more to value. Exclusions apply. For T's and C's, lidl.co.uk/LPTV 18 plus GB only.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:47 is the time. It's not to make light of this hideousness, but you could almost spin the wheel with the new phalanx of councillors and politicians coming into public life on Nigel Farage's coattails. You could spin a wheel that has got words like racism on it, or anti-Semitism, which is, of course, a form of racism, but I think one that deserves its own category, particularly in the current climate. And then you'll have sundry other grievances and horror shows that are likely to be persuaded. Hatred of Muslims, no doubt, will be there as well. But I think it would be a little bit disrespectful to the actual victims of this bile to have an actual wheel. Instead, we've got Henry Reilly, who will not be able to conduct Reilly's reform roundup indefinitely, because, as you may or may not be aware, Henry is very much the coming man here at LBC, and he not only has his own radio shows, but he's often out on manoeuvres, and he's got so we're going to spread it around, but in our hearts it will always be Reilly's reform roundup, even as we rename it something like the Road to 5 Million. Isn't that an interesting illustration of a diversity in a book, that you can go from 30p Lee to 5 million Farage in the space of a single party? Isn't that nice and uplifting? What have you got, Henry? And welcome back.
I'm blushing. Thank you, James. There's quite a few. I think we'll probably start with the biggest sort of story that's come out of those council elections, which is an individual called Glenn Gibbons, who was elected to Sunderland City Council on Thursday/Friday morning. He is currently under investigation following allegations of racism. Now, as I mentioned, he's in Sunderland. One of the leading Reform UK voices there is Darren Grimes, who's deputy leader of the council. He was asked about the comments, which I'll tell you in a moment, on the BBC.
Is that person still welcome in Reform UK?
He's been suspended and the party is investigating those very serious allegations and will act on them. There is no...
Shouldn't you have found this out before he was elected?
Well, yeah, it was a failure of the vetting process. I accept that. I do accept that. But, Richard, I just wish the media would shine a spotlight on the way in which the Green Party have had candidates who have been arrested and all the rest of it.
Asked repeatedly about it.
So he says there, Darren Grimes, that he's been suspended. I have been in touch with Reform UK, and he's not been suspended, but he is being investigated. Of course, you can't be both suspended and investigated.
But he hasn't been suspended.
So
we think Grimes is being crafty, or do we think that he just didn't know?
Well, I mean, certainly he said it with a lot of confidence, so unclear at the moment. I'm sure he wouldn't knowingly lie.
So what did this character actually say? If indeed you can repeat it on the radio.
I can repeat it, but I would give a warning that this is obviously incredibly offensive, so apologies in advance. But he wrote, and I sort of say it verbatim, can't, spelled C-A-R-N-T, believe amount of Nigerians in town should melt them all down and fill in the potholes.
Gosh.
Which was exposed by the campaign group Hope Not Hate. And these comments were actually exposed before the elections, a few days before, by that campaign group. But nonetheless, this individual has been elected, was still Reform UK on the ballot, still hasn't been suspended, but is being investigated. And the party's deputy leader, Richard Tice, was asked about this again on the BBC yesterday.
We have an internal party process, but here's the point.
Let me tell you, if somebody expresses that, we've
heard all the smearing and the sneering. Let me tell you what people are really concerned about.
Forgive me.
Laura, that's not
a sneer.
I'm going later. to a campaign against the scourge of anti-Semitism, right, which is the greatest threat facing us here in, particularly in London, but elsewhere across the UK. That's what people are really concerned about. We've stood up strongly for the Jewish community. And if people have said daft things, of course it'll be looked at.
So that was Richard, just to confirm then, so Glenn Gibbons, investigation ongoing, not currently suspended.
It's interesting when Tyson, even Farage himself, tried to cloak themselves in the clothes of people who are opposed to anti-Semitism, not least because of Farage's reported rhetoric when he was at school, and subsequently, of course, when he was condemned for talking about a Jewish lobby and the rest of it, when I think he was working here. But their own raft of candidates is likely to throw up a few examples of anti-Semitism as well.
Well, yes, there is someone who's been elected as a Reform UK councillor who described the Holocaust as a hoax. This is J. Leslie Cooper, who won a seat in Bootle West, which is part of Sefton Council. It was actually broken by the local newspaper, the Liverpool Echo, and they were alleged to have said on Facebook last year about Adolf Hitler, quote, "I don't agree with him murdering innocent people, but the Holocaust, spelt with an A, spelt wrong, is a hoax. This wasn't, sorry, there wasn't even 6 million Jews in Europe at the time, propaganda."
Wow.
Now, on that individual, they have been elected, but Reform UK say that he has resigned the whip and his membership is in the process of being revoked. The party previously said they were looking into the allegations, and as you might expect, they've been roundly criticised these comments. And he, what's interesting, he's actually the only Reform UK candidate elected in that ward. The other two were won by Labour. This individual managed to beat the third Labour candidate and be the top performing Reform UK on the ballot paper candidate.
Do you know why? Look at his name.
Cooper.
Yeah.
Yeah, high up.
Alphabetical order.
Often happens.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary anomaly in the British electoral system. Jim Waterson on London Centric was writing about it the weekend. It's done some research and statistics into it. It's incredible. But because it goes in alphabetical order, we are more likely to put a cross next to the name near the top of it than we are near the bottom.
Think of Adam Afrayi, the Conservative candidate. He's laughing.
Yeah. So indeed is Aaron Aardvark, who I believe is running for the Monster Raving Lunatic Party. Carry on, Henry.
This is a curious one.
So he's gone, but he's fallen on his sword. Rather than being, so no one yet has actually been punished by the party.
Although his membership is in the process of being revoked, but right. He did resign the whip. Another story, this is Michael Quigley, who's one of three Reform candidates who won the Houghton South ward on Sunderland City Council. Now, James, there's a sort of a curious back and forth between me and Reform on this, so let me read you what he said, and I'll let you interpret. "Why don't we put our defence forces to use and defend our borders? Anyone attempting to enter our sovereign territory without going through the proper channels will be shot on sight and transferred to a holding island where they will be given one day to present their documents or confirm their true nationality so they can be safely escorted to their home, wherever that may be."
Right.
Enough with this farting about with the endless boats escorted in the country. I did put those comments to Reform UK, noting he's been elected to Sunderland City Council. They say, a source in Reform says, he was talking about the boats in terms of shooting rather than the people. He even says they should be transferred to a holding island where they'll be given one day.
Anyone attempting to enter our sovereign territory.
The exact phrase, anyone attempting to enter our sovereign territory without going through the proper channels will be shot on sight. Although he does say later on, and transferred to a holding island.
Yeah.
Reform saying that he was referring to the boats. Okay. So it's not clear if there's an investigation into him.
3 for 3. We've got to get this up to 5 million by the next election.
You know? Oh, yeah, I was hearing.
5 million examples. What else have we got?
One more. Yes. This is Daniel Devani, who is, he actually topped the polls again on D.
Yeah,
surname,
D, you see.
On Bradford's.
Double D.
Double D.
D.
Yeah. Who topped the poll on Bradford City Council's ward of Clayton and Fairweather. He's one of two Reform candidates elected on the ballot. The third was the Labour Party. But he was dropped during the election, but he still was Reform on the ballot. The party have been in touch with me today to confirm that there is an investigation ongoing, but that he may not be suspended. So this is the curious thing. He was dropped during the election, but Reform UK, I specifically asked, was he suspended? They said there's an investigation ongoing, not suspended. even though he was dropped. Anyway, he said he described Muslims as pure scum, later clarifying, I said it when I was in a bad mood and watching TV.
Oh.
It was on and I just let off steam. They're not scum. It was a bad thing to say. I've offered to step down. He also said, I'm not racist as I help my Asian neighbours. I just want to do something for my community. And he apologised as well for that, but stood by his defence of Enoch Powell.
I suppose swings and roundabouts. It's a much more wholesome apology than anything that Nigel Farage has ever offered up for his reported comments about Jews. But on the other hand, it seems unlikely that that's the kind of thing that you would ever say or indeed post online by accident. So one day in and four... on the board.
Four on the board. I mean,
is that it, do you think? Should we park it now, this feature? Do you think there might be any more days, weeks, months, or even years?
It's over 1,450 new reform or re-elected reform candidates.
We need 5 million stories.
So, but there may be multiple stories. I mean, I wouldn't give up hope, James, if that's what you're saying. I mean, I think there could be multiple stories per candidate, not sort of wishing that, but, you know, that could be the lay of the land.
Indeedy doody. And we will keep a very close eye on proceedings. So just to go back to Tice, he was shown, I mean, he was asked to comment on the successful candidate, suggesting that Nigerian people should be melted down and used to fill in the potholes, and he refused to condemn that.
And he sort of tried to divert the conversation to the Green Party, which is actually the...
But you can do both. I mean, you could condemn that and then say, but the Greens have got questions to answer as well.
Yes.
But he didn't do that. He just refused to condemn the bloke who wants to melt down Nigerians.
Or Darren Grimes sort of falsely claimed that he'd been...
Yeah,
suspended.
But we don't know whether that was crafty or ignorant, do we? And the Greens do have a lot of questions to answer, and they're quite likely to be popping up frequently as well.
They do, and there, it's important to bring you Saika Ali, who was... this is one of the candidates who was arrested over alleged anti-Semitism. They were actually elected to the St Leonard's Ward in Lambeth Council, still under the Green Party ticket, although the party say they couldn't... it was too late to remove that. And just to be clear, the Green Party have confirmed that they will sit as an independent and that they have been suspended.
I've got a favourite.
Yeah.
Have you come across Peter Reeve yet? I'm not quite sure where he is, but I can tell you what he said.
I can tell you where he is, actually.
Oh, he's good, isn't he?
Huntingdonshire District Council.
A recently elected councillor for Reform.
Mm.
Reform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our message is UKIP's here, working hard with local communities. Sorry. Reform is here, working hard with local communities. And I've been doing this for the last 15 years, from the UKIP days all the way through to Reform.
Oh. Henry Riley, thank you very much indeed. That's it from me for another day. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. A range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily. Full disclosure, of course, this week with Philippa Perry. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sawbrick with you at 4 on LBC. Sheila Fogarty with you now.
Thanks very much, James. So, Keir Starmer, should he stay? Should he leave? Should he be pushed out? I personally struggle, cringe even, during most Keir Starmer speeches. This wasn't as bad as I'd feared. But there was nothing new, no sustained passion, no sense of a political core, talking about a new urgency with little urgency, talking about less incremental change while describing a new policy on Europe in precisely those incremental terms. Angela Rayner has just said that Labour needs to be a party for working people again. Isn't it any longer? Is that why you voted Green, Reform, Lib Dem, Tory in the elections on Thursday? Cabinet Minister, Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy is up next to give me her take, her thoughts, and I very much want yours as ever.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Angela Rayner says it was a mistake to block Andy Burnham from standing in a by-election earlier this year. The former Deputy Prime Minister has been addressing the Communication Workers Union after last week's dismal local election results.
The cost of living is the top issue for voters of all parties. People have turned to populists and nationalists because we have not done enough to fix it. People feel hopeless that the cost of living crisis will never end, and the Labour Party must now live up to its name. We must be the party for working people.
A speech by Sir Keir Starmer in an attempt to save his job has been described as too little too late by one backbencher. Catherine West says she is gathering the names of Labour MPs calling on the Prime Minister to step down. She wants Sir Keir to set a timetable for the election of a new leader in September. But addressing Labour activists earlier, he insisted working people would pay the price of constantly changing leaders.
They paid the price of this. They are still paying the price of this. A Labour government will not inflict that on our country again. We were elected with a mandate to change this country because of what had gone before. And that is what we will do.
The Prime Minister also hinted at some of the contents of Wednesday's King's speech. He revealed plans to nationalise British Steel and force closer ties with the European Union. Also this afternoon, 22 passengers evacuated from a cruise ship hit by hantavirus are at a quarantine site in Merseyside. They arrived in the UK last night after being flown home from Tenerife. Earlier, it emerged that two of the remaining people on board, an American and French national, had tested positive for the disease. Oil prices are up after President Trump dismissed Iran's counterproposal for peace talks. Tehran wants to separate discussions about ending a blockade in the Strait of Hormuz from the future of its nuclear program. And senior doctors in England are being balloted on potential strike action. Both consultants and specialist doctors are in dispute with the government over pay. The results of the ballot will be announced in July. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 4 points at 10,237. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloud and showers in the south will clear to sunshine through the afternoon. Elsewhere, sunny spells with the odd shower in the northeast, becoming cloudier in the northwest later, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
I'm in the kitchen with Charlie Bigham. So what have we got here, Charlie?
My brand new pan-fried pad thai noodles.
Noodles? But you're Mr. Fish Pie Guy.
Guilty. And while ovens rule at roasting,
the pan is king of noodling.
Whether it's pad thai, yakisoba or laksa, finding that perfect texture is a bottomless noodle rabbit hole.
But all I have to do is stir it in the pan for 6 minutes, right?
Bingo! Try the new Charlie Bigham's Asian pan-fry noodle range, handmade in my kitchen.
Pan-fried in yours.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I think we all knew that this morning's speech wasn't going to be box office particularly. Keir Starmer doesn't do box office speeches, but I was certainly looking for a degree of passion, a degree of sounding much more connected to his politics than he normally does and to the politics of the country than he normally does. And what I mean by that is I think Keir Starmer tends to sound like he's detached from the thing he's talking about. And he alluded to it himself. He said, evidence, I've been giving people too much evidence and not enough emotion. And then he said, for me, which was the line of the whole speech for a number of reasons, talk more about it later, stories beat spreadsheets. And that made me just think, well, I get what you're saying, but it sounds to me like the kind of thing you'd say in your preparations for a speech rather than put into a speech. But that's where we are. He's never been a great speech giver. And actually, I wouldn't hold that against somebody endlessly in politics if they're not the best speech maker. But it's a pretty key requirement, I think, in modern politics to be able to really grab people's attention. Here's a snippet of a long speech, longish speech anyway, of what Keir Starmer said this morning, just a flavour of it.
I think what we witnessed with the last government was the chaos of constantly changing leaders. And it cost this country a huge amount. A huge amount. And I'll tell you who paid the price. It was working people. They paid the price of this. They are still paying the price of this. A Labour government will not inflict that on our country again. We were elected with a mandate to change this country because of what had gone before. And that is what we will do. Yes, I acknowledge the frustration. Yes, I acknowledge the results are tough. Yes, I acknowledge that we've lost brilliant representatives across the United Kingdom. And I have a responsibility for that. But I also have a responsibility to deliver the change that we were elected and that we promised this country. And I'll deliver on that.
That was a bit of Keir Starmer's speech this morning. We'll play some more of it a little later and obviously reaction to it. I mean, there are already clarion calls for him to go from within his own party, or people who used to be members of his own party in the Commons and are now independents because of disputes with him and difficulties with him and with the wider party machinery. And they are not pretty. You had Catherine West, who spoke here on LBC over the weekend, to Lewis Goodall. Catherine West saying that if after that speech she wasn't sufficiently moved and believed that he was going to change things properly, she would stand against him herself. She says she is not in a position to do that right now, but she's basically started, she's circulating a letter amongst her colleagues asking for him to give a timetable for his departure. So the pressure is far from off Keir Starmer here by any means. I think the painful reality here, even though he tried to use as a kind of leitmotif throughout the speech, changing leaders isn't the answer, changing leaders isn't the answer, changing leaders isn't the answer. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is the answer. It was the answer when it was Boris Johnson. It was the answer when it was Liz Truss. And I think, for different reasons, I think it's the answer here to change their leader. And I think a growing number of MPs are feeling it too. And of course, we've talked about it before, and I'm no doubt we'll talk about it again. I'll be joined by Andrew Marr in half an hour. I'll speak to Lewis Goodall later on as well. I'm going to speak to the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, Lisa Nandy, in just a moment. We've talked about the likely replacements, but we're not there yet. And there's plenty of, you know, events still to come. But I think it's pretty obvious now that they can't stick with Keir Starmer. I'm joined actually by Lisa Nandy right now, who can talk to us, Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport and Labour MP for Wigan. We can talk about the local election results in her constituency at some point in our conversation too. Good afternoon to you, Lisa Nandy.
Hi, good afternoon.
Listen, it didn't hit the mark, did it? There was nothing new there. There was nothing rousing there. There was no change. There was no new.
Well, look, a speech is never going to be the only response to what happened on Thursday. We got an absolute kicking. It hurts. We lost good candidates. We saw communities that have stuck with us through thick and thin break faith with us. And the entire Labour movement is hurting. I don't think a speech was ever going to change that. But I do think the Prime Minister has done something very important today. It was a very personal speech. It was never going to be policy heavy. He wanted to explain to the country that he sees the problem, that he has made mistakes, that he understands that there was a level of personal animosity towards him, and that people don't see that he is as angry about the status quo as they are. And I think that was a really important recognition